what's going on.
I'm going to call together our City Council meeting of April 7th, 2014, and it is 6:30 p.m. And I'd like us all to stand just now for a moment of silence. And we have our flag salute next, and we have Juliana Vanessa Hernandez coming forward. She's 8 years old. She's a fourth grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School, and the subjects she likes in school are math, art, science, music, reading, and social studies. And she enjoys these subjects because they're fun and some of them are creative. And Juliana also likes living on the Central Coast because of all the walking and hiking trails, the cool summertime breezes, and the beach. Her interests are music, art, and last but not least, math. In addition, Juliana would like to learn other languages in high school or college. And she is accompanied this evening by her principal, Susan Kesselring. Susan, are you here? Maybe later. And her teacher, Mrs. McLean. Is Mrs. McLean here? Mom and baby sister. Are mom and baby sister here? There you are. Great. Looks like there's some other family members there, too. Is that right?
Yeah, dad and brother.
Dad and brother. Okay, well, you all are welcome to come forward and take photos at any point. You don't have to, you know, you don't have to stay in your place. And then you'll be able to see this again and again and again on Channel 20. And if you pick up an agenda at the front of the room there, it'll tell you when on Channel 20 you can see it. So, Juliana, do you want to get us started with the flag salute?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. That was well done. How about you come forward and shake everybody's hand, and we have something for you, too.
Well, thank you very much, young lady. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm going to have you stop here for a minute because Kathy's right. And let's, can you turn around for your mom too and maybe have everybody come up? Oh, I'll have her shake the hands. And may we have roll call, please?
Here.
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 Here. Here. And we have, I believe, a closed session announcement from City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. On March 17th, City Council met in closed session on one item, and that was existing litigation, Vernon versus City of Grover Beach. After reconvening into open session, it was announced that there were no reportable actions taken in closed session.
Thank you. And this is our agenda review time. This is the time when we will review the order of business to be conducted and receive requests for or make announcements regarding any changes in the order of the day. And then we should, by motion, adopt the agenda as presented or revised. Are there any changes for anyone wants to make?
No.
Nope. Okay, then. I will hear a motion, I hope.
So moved. Second.
Moved by Mayor Pro Tem Lee, seconded by Councilmember Nichols. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. We are unanimous that we're going to go with the order of the day. And next, we have our ceremonial agenda, and we have first a proclamation declaring April 2014 as Autism Awareness Month. And I often ask when this one rolls around if I can do it, because we do have an autism spectrum disorder in my immediate family. So I'm going to read this. Is there someone here to pick this up or to speak on this? Oh, wonderful. Okay, so when I'm done reading, come on up. We'll get a quick picture if you want a photograph.
Okay,
and then you can, if you have something to say, that would be great.
Okay.
So this is a proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring April 2014 as Autism Awareness Month. Whereas autism is a complex neurobiological disorder that typically lasts throughout a person's lifetime, it's a part of a group of disorders known as autism spectrum disorders, and autism affects all persons regardless of race, religion, socioeconomic status, or geography. And the incidence of autism in San Luis Obispo County reflects the national rate of 1 in 88, and a child being diagnosed with autism every 20 minutes. And ASDs are the fastest growing serious developmental disability, making these disorders more common than pediatric cancer, diabetes, and AIDS combined. And whereas individuals with ASDs and their families face tremendous and overwhelming challenges in accessing and navigating the complex programs and services for these disorders, and individuals with ASDs are valuable and talented citizens, and the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center will celebrate Autism Awareness Month at the Walk for Autism and Autism Awareness Fair on May 3rd, 2014 in Mission Plaza, both creating an empathetic, both events help to increase and develop knowledge regarding autism and are of paramount importance in creating an empathetic and compassionate citizenry. So if you want to come forward and we'll have a quick photo if anybody wants to get a photo. Do you need a photo for that? No? Okay. Well, we'll let you come get this in when you're done speaking. Oh, good. And we need your name and city of address, city of residence, too, please.
My name is Mercedes Meyer from Arroyo Grande.
Great. Thank you.
Oh, well, thank you very much. We're very appreciative to the city of Grover Beach and the council members for acknowledging the impact of autism spectrum disorder on the individuals in the community at large, as well as acknowledging the work that the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center does. The most recent statistics from the CDC released last week are actually 1 in 68. Children are now, at the age of 8, affected by autism spectrum disorder. That's a 30% increase from 2 years ago. The staggering increase only emphasizes the need for awareness and for support with individuals with autism spectrum disorder, also known as ASD. The Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center continues to serve as a community resource to help individuals and families affected by ASD and navigate and find resources in their community with passion, commitment, and collaboration. In addition, the Central Coast Autism Spectrum Center provides programs for those with ASD across the lifespan, including support groups, day camps, expert panels, and ASD-friendly events. Our newest program, Destination Supported Employment, comes at a time when only 1 in 5 adults with ASD ever have full-time employment at minimum wage in their lifetime. We offer pre-employment training in practical job skills as well as life skills to adults with ASD. We provide short-term intensive support with a supported program, and then we make a quality match between the candidates and employers. Long-term follow-up support for both the employee and the employer ensure lasting and successful employment. Since September of last year, Destinations has worked with Applied Technologies in Paso Robles, and we have successfully placed 10 employees and fostered 4 transitions of adults into permanent employment. And yet, perhaps the most rewarding outcome thus far is permanently changing the expectations and perceptions of adults with ASD. Thank you again for this honor and the beautiful proclamation you guys always give us. And we hope to see you at our 6th annual Walk for Autism in Mission Plaza.
Great. Come up and get this. We don't want you to go away without it. Oh, let's do a photo.
Oh, boy. Here we go.
And next on our ceremonial agenda, we have a proclamation declaring April 2014 as Month of the Child, and Councilmember Bright's going to present this one. And I believe we have Rochelle Boley-Sutton from the San Luis Obispo County Child Care Planning Council. That's who I thought you might be. Great.
Thank you. Whereas Saturday, April 12, 2014, will commemorate the Day of the Child, celebration during Children's Day in the San Luis Obispo Mission Plaza from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m., a day where children and families can play, learn, and interact with the agencies and programs providing services throughout the county. The Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month is a time to recognize that it is our responsibility to provide opportunities for children and to commit ourselves to ensuring that each and every child experiences a high-quality early environment at home, at childcare, at school, and in the community that will promote their optimal development. The City of Grover Beach recognizes that every moment in a child's life is an opportunity for that child to learn, and that the quality of these experiences may determine whether a child succeeds in life, in school, and in life, and that all children need caring and loving adults in their lives. The activities of this month will provide an opportunity to acknowledge youth and early care and education programs and their dedicated staff, and to raise the awareness of the community, employers, and elected officials of the need to improve the quality, availability, and accessibility of such programs. Whereas may we remember to listen to and watch the children around us, to have patience, and to allow them the opportunity to enjoy the journey of childhood.
And did you want to come forward and say something? And do you need a photo op as well?
I didn't bring anybody with me.
Okay. We can provide the photographer.
Okay, well, thank you.
But if you give us your name and your city of residence, thanks.
So, hi, my name is Rochelle Bolle Sutton. I live in Atascadero, California, and I am the coordinator of the San Luis Obispo County Child Care Planning Council. I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time to recognize Month of the Child and Child Abuse Prevention Month, and all of the efforts that are going on all year round to support our children in early care and early education, and as well as our after-school programs that are all throughout the county. What the council does is we work in partnership with families and the community to plan for and promote the highest quality and accessible care services for all children and youth. What I do is I advocate for quality child care and early learning in our community, and I represent our county statewide. So it's a really great opportunity for us to be able to showcase what we do here in San Luis Obispo County. And thank you so much for being part of this countywide event. And I do have some treats for you guys.
Oh, good.
Great.
Thank you.
That deserves a big hand.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. And here's your proclamation. So, are you ready for it?
Thank you very much.
Kathy's coming forward.
Okay. Did you, let's. We can do a photo.
Can I have one online? Number two. That's enough. Okay.
That one must do.
Okay. There we go.
Am I good here? That's great. No. Goodbye, me.
We should hold up our treats.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
Our next proclamation is declaring April 2014 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month and April 12th as Walk a Mile in Her Shoes Day. And I believe Jennifer Adams, the Executive Director of RISE, which is Respect, Inspire, Support, and Empower, is here. Oh, good. And I've asked Jeff Lee to do it because he and his wife have been really active in this.
Jennifer's in here, but I am.
Oh, good. And so you can come forward and tell us your name and where you live once we get, or you can, we'll do this first.
Whereas Sexual Assault Awareness Month is intended to draw attention to the fact that sexual violence is widespread and has public health implications for every community member of San Luis Obispo County. Whereas rape, sexual assault, and sexual harassment impact our community, as seen by statistics indicating that 1 in 6 women and 1 in 33 men will be sexually assaulted in their lifetime. Whereas child sexual abuse prevention must be a priority to confront the reality that 44% of sexual assault survivors are under the age of 18. And whereas we must work together to educate our community about sexual violence prevention, supporting survivors, and speaking out against harmful attitudes and actions. And whereas staff and volunteers of RISE, which stands for Respect, Inspire, Support, Empower, formerly the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center and North County Women's Shelter and Resource Center of San Luis Obispo County, encourage every person to speak out when witnessing acts of violence, however small. Whereas with leadership, dedication, and encouragement, there is compelling evidence that we can be successful in reducing sexual violence in San Luis Obispo County through prevention, education, increased awareness, and holding perpetrators who commit acts of violence responsible for their actions. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach hereby proclaims April 2014 as Sexual Assault Awareness Month in Grover Beach.
Thank you. And if you just tell us your name and your city of residence.
Thank you. My name is Jessie Torrey, and I live in Atascadero. Thank you, Mayor Pro Tem Lee and Mayor Peterson and the City Council. I am the Associate Director of RISE, formerly the Sexual Assault Recovery and Prevention Center and the North County Women's Shelter and Resource Center. We're just over a year old as a merged organization. While we provide domestic violence services in the North County, we are the only agency that provides sexual assault services in the county. So we serve the entire county on our rape prevention side. Last year, RISE helped almost 400 men and women and children who had been affected by sexual assault or sexual abuse. We also provided education, prevention education in the schools, and self-defense classes to hundreds in our community in an effort to prevent this crime from happening in the first place. Our vision is to create a world that is free of sexual violence, and that means that we have to be aware and we have to take action. We're inviting the county residents to participate in any of our awareness events. I have a calendar here that I hope to get you with all kinds of really informative and fun events, strangely enough. We have Take Back the Night at Farmers Market in partnership with Cal Poly Safer Program. And this year we are especially excited as we expand our 12th annual Walk a Mile in Her Shoes, which is the national men's movement against rape and sexual violence. This inaugural event in Paso Robles will take place in City Park, downtown Paso, on Saturday, April 12th. And then we will have our Mission Plaza event in San Luis on Saturday, April 26th. Both of these events feature live music, a brief program, and an awareness fair, and a one-mile walk through downtown where we will have men walking in high-heeled shoes. It is quite a sight to see. And it's important for us to promote this event because this is a community issue that is all of our issue. We make it fun, a little bit of light of a very serious issue to bring awareness to this this issue that affects all of us. So if you're interested, check out our website, riseslow.org, for details and registration information. But most importantly, Sexual Assault Awareness Month is about honoring victims, whether they've told their story or not. We do this by raising awareness and destroying myths that make it difficult for survivors to talk about their experiences. And lastly, I would like to thank and acknowledge our staff, volunteers, board of directors for all the hard work they do in the effort to end sexual assault in our community. They are an incredible group of people and are absolutely dedicated to their work, and I am honored to work with such a compassionate group of people every day. So thank you again for this proclamation, and we hope to see you on the 12th or the 26th. And if you come, be sure to wear your high heels. We'll even paint your toes. Wow.
I know.
So I don't have goodies.
That's okay. You can. We'll do a photo. We do this because we want Grover Beach on your Facebook page. Thank you.
I saw something fall.
And last, we have a proclamation declaring the week of April 13th through 19th as National Public Safety Telecommunications Week. And receiving this proclamation is the Communications Supervisor, Devin Pollitt. Is Devin here? Oh, yeah. There we go. Great.
I'm going to be a little different. I'm going to ask Devin to come up here now. You would, please? I'm going to have you hold that while I read its content.
Okay.
Whereas, well, first of all, this proclamation of the City Council, of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach, declaring the week of April 13 through April 19 as National Public Safety Telecommunications Week in the City of Grover Beach. Whereas, emergencies can occur at any time that require police, fire, emergency, and medical services. And whereas, when an emergency occurs, the prompt response of police officers, firefighters, and paramedics is critical to the protection of life and preservation of property. And whereas, the safety of our police officers and firefighters is dependent upon the quality and accuracy of information obtained from citizens who telephone the Grover Beach Police Fire Communication Center. And whereas, public safety dispatchers are the first and most critical contact our citizens have with emergency services. And whereas, public safety dispatchers are the single vital link for our police officers and firefighters by monitoring their activity by radio, providing them information and ensuring that safety, their safety. And whereas, public safety dispatchers of Grover Beach Police Department have contributed substantially to the apprehension of criminals, suppression of fires, and treatment of patients. And whereas each dispatcher has exhibited compassion, understanding, and professionalism during the performance of their job over the past year. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim the week of April 13 through 19, 2014, as National Public Safety Telecommunications Week in honor of the women and men whose diligence and professionalism keep our city and citizens safe. Signed by Mayor Debbie Peters.
Chief has something to say.
And Madam Mayor and members of the council, I can't help myself. I too want to just, while they're here, I publicly want to thank my dispatchers for an outstanding job that they do for our community. So thank you.
Thank you.
And I would like to comment that our dispatch has taken over the fire dispatch for the Five Cities Fire Authority. While the City of Arroyo Grande is remodeling or rebuilding their police station, and they so far have done an outstanding job, and my compliments to all of the dispatchers and Chief and all of the people that work with you.
Thank you. Anybody else have anything they wanted to say on any of the proclamations? No? Okay, great. We're moving now into public communications. And at this time, any member of the public may address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest within the jurisdiction of this council. We will listen to all communications. However, in compliance with the Brown Act, the council cannot act on items not on the agenda. So I'm going to open public communications, and if anyone would like to come forward, we'd love to hear from you.
Good evening, friends. How are you tonight? My name is Kevin Rice. I just wanted to comment on the APCD's approval of the consent decree with state parks regarding the dust litigation. 2.5 years ago, me and Karen were at the hearing, and one of the biggest issues, what Parks was asking for in place of a hard rule with a permit and penalties and fines, They're asking for something called best management practices. And that's a phrase coined by the timber and pollution industries. And it simply means that you use the best techniques available and that you evaluate any results you have and you come back and you improve and you evolve and try to figure it out. And that's what State Parks was asking for. At the hearing, State Parks Chief Phil Jenkins basically said, best management practices, it needs to be an iterative process. If it doesn't work, we need to do a second iteration. Try again. Keep going back until it works. Ed Waggy, I like the idea of best management practices. Roberta Fonzi, I feel more comfortable with the concept of looking at putting best management practices into place. Frank Meacham, best management practices to do something. Mayor Shelley Higginbotham, letter from Pismo, best management practices. Friends of the Dunes, best management practices. Everybody was asking for best management practices. It's my position that APCD has been the party that doesn't cooperate. And they said, no, we're going to do a role. We're going to do an operating permit. Well, the consent decree just signed said State Parks have agreed to take action, blah, blah, blah. This will involve an iterative process of mitigation actions, evaluation, and revision to achieve the immediate goal. So 2.5 years of litigation, we've ended up with what I and others have asked for, what State Parks asked for, after wasting a heck of a lot of money and time. I'm not really pleased with that. And I believe your mayor has been right on the ball all along, saying, mitigate, don't litigate. There was no need for that. And the same thing happened with the operating permit, the consent decree. State Parks will not be required, pursuant to this consent decree, to obtain a permit to operate. 2.5 years ago, I could give you all the same quotes, but I'm running out of time. Everybody was saying, we don't like the permit. And here we go. We got rid of it after 2.5 years of litigation. I really want to congratulate Mayor Peterson for staying strong on those issues, because that's what we got after wasting all that time and money. And I'm agreement with Francis' comments on the next item, but I'm not going to stick around. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Is there anyone else who'd like to come forward? Okay, seeing none, we will close public comments. And we'll move now into our public hearing. And the next public hearing, or the first public hearing tonight, is the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center Development Permit Application Number 1003. The applicant is Pacifica Companies, and our Community Development Director Buckingham will be presenting for us.
Excuse me for one moment here.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the City Council. This is going to be a little bit of a challenge tonight. I'm going to try to give you the right slides at the right time. The Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center project has been envisioned for over 30 years now, and began in 1982 when the state amended their general plan to designate the site for a 150-room hotel and restaurant. In 2006, the city and state entered into a joint powers agreement, which created the Joint Authority, or JA, to move forward with the project. In 2009, Pacifica Companies was selected as the hotel and developer and operator, after a public review process. Finally, in December of 2013, the council did approve the coastal development permit for this project. This culminated a public review process that included 7 public hearings before the Planning Commission, City Council, and the California Coastal Commission, spanning a 3.5-year period. In late December, the council directed staff to reconsider the project based on a potential procedural issue raised by Friends of Oceano Dunes relating to filing of the final action notice for the project. It should be noted both the City and Coastal Commission contend that there is no issue with the filing of that. As you all know, but for anybody watching or listening, the project site is located at the west end of Grand Avenue. The project consists of a 150-room hotel, convention center, and restaurant totaling about 121,000 square feet within 4 buildings on the 13-acre site. And as you're familiar, there is the site, Grand Avenue, of course, at the bottom. Finn's is at the lower left-hand corner and the golf course clubhouse upper left-hand corner. Just briefly walking through the site plan, building 1 is the large building in the center. That's going to be challenging. It's about 63,000 square feet, 3 stories. It's 72 rooms. Building 2 is in the upper left-hand corner, 19,000 square feet, now 2 stories and 31 rooms. And building 3 is about 29,000 square feet, 3 stories with 47 rooms. And, of course, building 4 is the conference center over on the right-hand side, consisting of about 11,000 square feet in a single-story building. The lodge would have approximately 209 parking spaces, which exceeds the zoning code requirement of 158. Those parking spaces are primarily located right here. The state park has 160 existing parking spaces today for public use. The project would retain all 160 of those parking spaces. They're slightly redistributed, with some adjacent to Finn's, some adjacent to the golf course, and some located at the southeast corner of the project site right here. Based on the Coastal Commission's action, as you're familiar, they eliminated the equestrian parking that had been proposed on the south side of West Grand Avenue, and the project has been revised to incorporate approximately 10,000 square feet for equestrian and oversized vehicle parking, and that's right here in this triangular area. Also, the existing RV dump station on the site would be removed and would be relocated to the existing dump station at the North Beach campground. So following the council's approval of the project in December, there were 2 appeals filed with the Coastal Commission, one by 2 of the coastal commissioners and the other by Friends of Oceano Dunes. The first appeal filed by the 2 planning commissioners of the Coastal Commission, which is a standard procedure. If 2 of them file an appeal that's with a stated reason, that's considered an appeal. And their issue was consistency with the local coastal program, or LCP, policy related to shoreline armoring. Shoreline armoring is when a barrier is constructed to protect the coast from hazards such as a tsunami. The policy required the property owner assume risks caused by or created by coastal hazards and waive the right to construct any future shoreline armoring. However, this is a unique situation because the state park is the owner, and they already have existing policies in place to protect or to not construct shoreline armoring barriers. So in the end, after several months, the 2 state agencies, the California Coastal Commission and State Parks, who are both part of the state's Natural Resource Agency, have agreed on a condition of approval that's been added to the resolution tonight that does address this issue. The second appeal was filed by Friends of Oceano Dunes, which contends several inconsistencies with the Coastal Act and the city's local coastal program. The purpose of the project reconsideration is not intended to be a review of these appeals. These are appeals to the Coastal Commission. However, as a result of adding the condition for shoreline armoring in your resolution tonight, it is very unlikely that an appeal would be filed by coastal commissioners and subsequently. If the council does have any questions related to those appeals, staff would be happy to address them more specifically. So since the council has decided to reconsider the project, the council's adoption of a new resolution of approval will rescind the previous resolution from December. This would result in the two appeals becoming null and void because you basically are reapproving the project. A new appeal period will begin, and any grieved party can file an appeal. Any appeal requires the Coastal Commission to hold a hearing within 49 days, unless waived by the applicant, to determine if the appeal raises to a substantial issue relative to conformance, again, with the local coastal program and the Coastal Act public access policies. At the substantial issue hearing, if the Coastal Commission determines there's no issues, then it's basically dismissed and the local decision would stand. If they do find substantial issue, then the Coastal Commission takes jurisdiction over the coastal development permit, and a de novo hearing is scheduled where all aspects of the project can be then considered by them. In conclusion, staff's recommending the council approve the coastal development permit tonight. Staff and State Park representatives are here to answer any questions for you. And lastly, I wanted to note that the city did receive a letter from Friends of Oceana Dunes today.
Thank you. Were there any questions of staff?
Yes,
ma'am. Councilmember Nichols.
Yeah. What this really boils down to simplify all of this, isn't this really a matter of wording? Our local coastal plan prohibits armoring. State Parks has wording that prohibits armoring along the coast. So wasn't it simply a matter of terminology or wording more than anything else?
Correct. I mean, I don't think there was any disagreement that everybody accepted the policy. State Parks has acknowledged, again, that they their policies are in place to have no shoreline armoring. So this just came down to we had to put something in the staff report, and unfortunately it took several months to come to a conclusion.
Yeah. Thank you.
That's all I have.
Any other questions?
No. Is it one quick question?
Sure.
Apologies. So thank you for that report, Bruce. That was very good. With regards to the parking, there's 160 parking spaces now under the code. 158 is what's required under the code, but so we're actually overparked currently. But we're going to add another almost 50 additional spaces through the development of the project. Obviously, there's going to be an opportunity for people to walk into the beach, for equestrians to come into the beach because of the larger parking area that's going to be provided as part of it. So circulation's been addressed, parking's been addressed, perhaps not to the level that all parties would consider, but it's been reviewed through the EIR. It's, traffic circulation's been reviewed, the pump station's been reviewed. So we've gone through that entire process. Correct?
Correct.
And there was ample opportunity for a number of people to provide input and comments during all that time, and those have all been addressed throughout this entire process, correct?
That's correct. And I would just add that I think going way back to the beginning, State Parks and the applicant Pacifica companies have always recognized that you're going to have peak weekends, 4th of July, Labor Day, and that there is going to have to be some coordination on parking between the two parties, and they've always said that they recognize that and agree to do that.
And then one just quick follow-up question. The layout that you have in front of you there is it may change slightly as the developer and the city and the JA goes through and makes modifications to better amplify the project, but it's not going to change the project. So there might be some minor tweaks to the parking lot to accommodate turning movements and so forth, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so now that's got me asking questions again. 160 spots plus 60 additional spaces. So are you saying we have 160 now and we're going to have an additional 60?
The existing state park has 160 spaces, and there will be 160 parking spaces for public day use. The actual lodge had a requirement of only 158, and they have 209, I believe it is, proposed.
So we have 160. Do you mean 209 total or an additional 209?
It's dividing the total parking up into the two particular distinct users. The lodge, the private development, will have 209 parking spaces. The public parking will also be an additional 160 spaces. And then that doesn't include the approximately 10,000 square feet for the parking of the other oversized vehicles as well.
So we actually have 160 plus 209, 369 parking spaces, whereas we currently have 160?
Correct.
Okay. And in addition, we have 10,000 square feet for oversized vehicles.
Correct.
All right. I didn't realize we had that much. That's significant. Thank you. And one other question, and this one's just arisen for me when I'm looking at some of the aerials in the letter submitted by Friends of the Dunes. I had forgotten that there are those nice trees back behind the vacant lot, between the vacant lot and the current dump site. And I think at least one of them is an oak. Are those going to be retained when we develop the lodge?
No, they are not.
Oh, do we have some... Don't we have a rule that if you take out an oak tree, you have to plant five somewhere or something?
I don't recall that they were oak trees. There was some discussion
in the
Willis.
EIR.
Mm-hmm. I think one is at least a pine tree as well.
Okay. I'll go visit the trees and see. Thank you. I'm going to open this to public comment now if there are no other questions. Is there anyone who'd like to come forward? 3 minutes limit, and please come forward.
Okay.
3 minutes, and give us your name and your city of residence, please.
Yes, Josh Martin. I'm a resident of Grover Beach, and I'm here with my 9-year-old son, Max, who's also from Grover Beach, is a fourth grader at Grover Heights. But I'm here tonight in my capacity as chairman of the board for the Rio Grande Grover Beach Chamber of Commerce. The board of directors for the chamber want to reiterate its full support for the council's continuing efforts to move the lodge project forward. It's my understanding that efforts to get the Grover Beach Lodge going have been alive since 1977, although the gentleman here mentioned it was 1982, so I may be off by 5 years. But in any event, that's a long time. There are several community members, council members, city staff, consultants, and others that have spent a lot of time preparing this and putting this project together. And here we are 37 years later on the cusp of final approval. So in our view, that's final approval for a new and important tourist draw to this area, a much-needed source of revenue for this area, and a facility that will attract conferences from around the state and perhaps even the country one day. So we believe this project's going to help put Grover Beach on the map as a potential destination and grow a larger, sustainable revenue stream for this area. That, of course, will ultimately enhance our city. And not only will there be desperately needed revenue streams for the government, but the existing businesses in Grover Beach will likely see a surge in business. There will be new businesses that will likely emerge. And that means there will be more jobs in this area, which, as we all know, are a scarce resource on the Central Coast. So this all translates, again, to a better quality of life here. So we thank you, council members, city staff, for all your hard work and your vision in this area. And let's get to the finish line on this. Thanks.
Thanks very much. And I also have a speaker slip from Dee Rudd, who I believe wanted to speak on this.
Dee Rudd, Aurora Grande. I'm speaking on behalf of the equestrian users and RV users. The vacant lot for years has been a parking lot. It's not a, quote, vacant lot, no use. It's used. That's why it's so hard-packed. It's soft in one small part in the center, if you'll notice, and that's where everybody turns around. And I think 10,000 square feet, you're saying that there will be a triangular area there. There doesn't seem to be any ability for me to get my small horse trailer, and which is about 13 feet, and then the tongue width, a length about 5 feet, in my single cab truck, about 18 feet, around there, and how to park. I may be able to get in, but I won't be able to get out. And a parking lot for a horse
horses, equestrians, is different than a staging area. A staging area is where you have the additional area to get your horse out of the trailer in back, or if it's a side load on the side, get your tack out of the side, and without being pinned in by cars. And I have a question, is will this be limited use for to equestrians and oversized vehicles? Will it be marked as such and guarded as such, or will it be just there?
We'll respond to questions at the end, yeah.
Okay. And I would just like to request that the developers work to satisfactorily resolve the staging area for equestrians and RV use per the resource code, which stated that there would be no impact to the users of the park. This will be a huge impact to equestrians and to RVers. I've been down there day in and day out taking counts. It's enormous impact that you guys are going to make on our use of the park. I've had one person say, oh, well, you can just drive down on the beach and unload your horse down there. I can't. I have a two-wheel drive truck. Plus, if I'm going to park down on the beach, I'm going to leave my trailer for 2 hours and watch the tide come up and take it, or get stuck in the beach and incur, a $300 towing or more, as I have a truck and a trailer. It's just not realistic to expect people to drive down onto the beach. If there's no place to park, how are we going to ride the beach? And same thing with RVers. They come off the beach, they've got to have some place they can stop and air up their tires to get back onto the highways. So is there a place planned for that? And how do they get into that from and going across traffic to get into that little triangular thing? And there's an enormous amount of RVers down there, especially on the holidays. And this is a people's beach, in my opinion. We could have added more parking as a tiered structure and allowed more room for RVs to be there and equestrians, allow everybody. And I was there the couple years ago when equestrians were, or not equestrian, just people users were 300 in that parking lot, not vacant lot. Thank you.
Thank you for taking the time to come forward. And I understand that you wanted to comment on the next one as well.
It would be my same comment. There's
okay. Okay, thank you. All righty. Anybody else want to come forward from the public? Nope. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the council. And I'm wondering, Director Buckingham, if you have any comments to make to clarify some of the questions there.
Well, I do happen to have a diagram here prepared by the applicant that, and maybe I needed to clarify that the triangular area is really, as you can see from this, the entire interior separated by drive aisles. And so this just simply demonstrates that even a large vehicle can come in the entrance, turn left, and as we had talked about at the December meeting, even though this does show some landscaping in the site plan, the condition is that this area really should just be one open area. Likely a DG or surface, so it's all weather. And yes, there is a condition also that talks about a comprehensive signage program, and I think, yes, this area is going to be signed for oversized vehicles only. So I guess back to the diagram, as it does show that a large vehicle can circulate all the way around or take access. But as of now, the discussion with state parks is that this would not be striped in any way. It would just be a large open area for vehicular access.
Thank you. The other thing I'm thinking it might be helpful to clarify is that the JPA did make a commitment to provide equestrian staging area, and we were very disappointed when the Coastal Commission did not support that and came back with the suggestion that equestrians should stage with vehicles, with car parking. And do we have an update on where we are in finding an additional location for the equestrians?
Madam Mayor, I'll answer that question. We're continuing to work with the equestrians. I met several weeks ago with them, and actually they had identified three sites in the Oceano area near the airport. One of them is actually on the airport. I'm continuing to vet those alternatives with the county, and as soon as I have more information, I'll respond back to the equestrians. We're attempting to facilitate an alternative parking space that it will be roughly equivalent to the size of the staging area that was south of Grand.
Which is about half an acre, is
actually,
that right?
It was closer to almost an acre, if I'm not mistaken.
Thank you. Any comments or further questions from the council?
Just one clarification. Bruce, if you could go back to your detail. Could you just identify the size of the truck, or just reiterate the size of the truck that you used for the turning radiuses?
It is a turning radius of a 60-foot truck and trailer, or a 42-inch camper, and
42-foot camper.
42-foot camper. I'm sorry.
So a 60-foot trailer and a 60-foot equestrian truck, or a 42-foot RV.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes, please.
Please.
So then, if you can, what would you say would be the capacity in that area for staging of how many, just roughly?
Hold on. I don't want to conflict what we have previously stated. We indicated we thought it would be able to easily accommodate 5 to 7 trailers, depending on the size and the parking configuration, how they park.
So, like, probably you're talking, like, I would imagine, like, the worst-case scenario, so 60-foot or so large vehicles.
Again, probably in that case, on the lower end, closer
right.
to 5.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
No. I'll make a motion if you'd like.
I had one more question before we get to that. I believe we've talked about the impediments that are shown in the design drawings, that those are design drawings. They're drawings. They're not the final plan. Is that right? So those impediments that would make it hard for a large vehicle to get around, all those parking lot little trees and it looks like planters. Will those?
Correct. There is a condition of rule. The way this was shown conceptually with landscaping and potentially raised planters and trees and here, the condition states that they need to be eliminated to maximize parking for oversized vehicles.
Okay. So that was merely a pretty picture. It's not a hard and fast plan of what we're doing.
Correct.
The hard and fast plan is entirely different.
The condition requires mm-hmm. that this plan be changed for final drawings, yes.
That's helpful. Okay. And then one of the things mentioned by Ms. Rudd when she was speaking was that was questioning whether or not it would have been possible to do any tiered parking. I'm certainly not asking, can we go back and redesign the hotel? But did we look at that? Did we consider that as an option?
I'm not so sure I understand what the term tiered.
Well, my assumption
means
is that we're talking about maybe some underground parking, or we're maybe talking about a parking structure where we have two or three floors for parking.
Yeah. Going back many years ago at the beginning of this process, the developer contemplated that, looked at the financial feasibility, and determined that it would have to be surface parking.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Now I think we're done with questions and comments.
Good. I would like to move that we adopt the resolution approving the coastal development permit and the site and architectural plans.
I'll second that with a comment when we get there.
Oh, well, we're there.
Okay,
yeah.
Perfect. Okay, cool. And this is mostly just a one housekeeping item and one appreciation item is on the resolution. So in on page 14 of that, we'll start on page 13. I see a CDD-18 under coastal hazards risk.
If we go to page 14, I'm assuming we're supposed to have a CDD 19 in front of the paragraph that would lead off as coastal hazard response.
If I could clarify, initially we thought this was going to be two conditions, and I think it stated that in the previous staff report. When the condition was finalized, it was determined that it was really just should be one condition, and hence the continuation of the small letters A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. Those are all part of CDD 18.
That works. Okay. Great. So, and then my appreciation comment is for the JA to moving forward with all of this, and then also with the Coastal Commission staff and State Parks staff and council and Mr. Laird's office, the Environmental Resource Director Laird's office, who may have kind of just been aware of this as it's moving forward and all those agencies coming together, and we appreciate all the time and effort that went into that. So to make this come back to us tonight.
Thank you. Okay, so we have a motion by Councilmember Nichols and a second by Mayor Pro Tem Lee, and this is a roll call. Could we have the roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Councilmember Brent?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Our next item, I will need to recuse myself because I live and work within, is it 500 feet of the item on the agenda, so I'm going to move on and just pass on this request to speak to Mayor Pro Tem Lee.
I'll ask her again. I'll just make sure. Okay. And we'll take a brief moment as the mayor is leaving the chambers. And looks like this is going to be presented by Public Works Director, City Engineer Ray. Okay. Okay. Did perhaps we should take a 5-minute recess? We'll go ahead and take a five minute recess. You sure? Okay. City Manager, did you concur with that?
Yes.
Okay. Then I'll turn it over to our Public Works Director, City Engineer, Mr. Greg Ray.
It is now. Try that again. This is a discussion of capital improvement project number 270, the West Grand Avenue Enhancement Project Phase 3, and in particular the issuance of a coastal development permit. I'm going to jump ahead through the background. And basically the purpose of tonight's public hearing is to allow public comments on the coastal development permit prior to council taking action on this item. The proposed capital improvement project includes improvements between the beach and Highway 1 and between 4th and 5th Streets in the city of Grover Beach. However, only the portion of the project between the beach and Highway 1 is within the coastal zone and requires approval of a coastal development permit. The portion of the project west of Meadow Creek Bridge will include construction of a new 10-foot wide concrete multi-use path and new landscape areas planted with native dune plants on the north side, and an all-weather surface pedestrian and equestrian path on the south side, with trail fencing separating the equestrian pedestrian path from vehicles. There's an exhibit, Attachment 1, Exhibit A, and I'm going to comment right now is that Attachment 1, Exhibit A is a conceptual plan, and there have been modifications to that plan. So per council direction, staff eliminated the street trees, the tree grates, and there's a couple items on that conceptual plan that have been relocated. For example, the crosswalks have been relocated to the major entrances. The portion of the project east of the Meadow Creek Bridge will include replacement of the existing sidewalk. The project will also include pavement repairs, striping, and slurry seal, just some miscellaneous cleanup items. The project will maintain three oversized lanes for vehicles, two westbound and one eastbound, and will have no effect on the road capacity as it stands today, or the turning movements as they stand today. All work will be completed within the existing street right-of-way and immediately adjacent to the right-of-way on State Parks property on the north side of West Grand Avenue. Project construction will not encroach into the adjacent dune or riparian habitat, including the Meadow Creek corridor. So the project has been designed to accommodate the future development of the Grover Beach Lodge and Conference Center. The placement of the driveway access is being coordinated with the lodge to assure that, of course, improvements will serve the future project as intended. Staff has identified two alternatives for City Council to consider, and they include, one, adopt the resolution approving coastal development permit for the project, or, two, provide alternate direction to staff. Staff's recommendation is that Council consider public testimony and adopt the resolution approving the coastal development permit for the project. Fiscal impact, the proposed project is part of an adopted capital improvement program for fiscal years 2014 and 2015. The total amount budget for the project is $927,951. The overall project cost should be considered at such time when the Council considers awarding the construction bid. But I will note that the majority of the funds allocated to this project are, in fact, a grant fund. And as often is the case, this grant fund is not available for paving local streets or other projects within the city. They are specifically transportation enhancement funds, which include development of things like pedestrian paths, bicycle paths and walkways, landscaping enhancement, lighting, and things like that. So that basically concludes my report. There are two resolutions. I'm sorry, there's one resolution included with the staff report. And, of course, there's the exhibit that I referred to earlier, and I'd be happy to answer any questions if you have them.
Does anyone to my left have questions of staff?
No questions.
Anyone to my right?
Yes.
Mr. Nichols, Councilmember Nichols.
Greg, you indicate in the report that we have about $800,000 in grant money.
That is correct.
The total project cost is $927,951. That's about $128,000 short. Do you can you tell us where that $128,000 is coming from?
Yes. As a matter of fact, the what they call a TE, or Transportation Enhancement Grant, as you mentioned, is about $800,000. The remainder of the funds will be made up of LTF funds, local transportation funds, gas tax, and a small portion of general fund, as well as, I believe, a portion of water fund and sewer fund. So it's a combination of funds, but primarily grant funds and primarily funds that come back to us as a result of gas and excise taxes.
Okay, and the other question I have, you mentioned the movement of the pedestrian crossing. There are two pedestrian crossings. One is to the west of the main entrance, and I thought you were stating that that was going to be moved to the west side.
That's correct. Actually, both of the pedestrian crossings that you see indicated on this conceptual plan will be being relocated. The one furthest to the west will be relocated to the main entrance. So
isn't that the main entrance just below it? You're talking about the main driveway entrance?
That's correct. Just to the east of the crosswalk shown is the main driveway entrance.
So yeah. We're talking about the one right in the middle? Or are you talking about the one furthest to the east?
The crosswalk furthest to the west?
To the west, so
we'll move east to the main entrance.
So the one that actually lines up with, like, the pathway that goes into the dunes?
That's correct. It'll
be moved. So that's going to move to the middle.
To the middle, basically, right, of your drawing.
Okay. All right. That clarifies it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That's all I have.
Okay. Actually, I did have a couple questions, one of which is and I apologize for not giving you a heads up for this earlier in the day. This did not require Planning Commission approval? This permit can come directly through us? Or is this the first step in that process?
No, as I understand it, does not require Planning Commission.
Okay. And is that the same reason why it's exempt from CEQA, that this has already been reviewed under the EIR for the lodge and those overall improvements?
Yeah, both CEQA and NEPA have been satisfied as a result of this project.
Okay, great. And so what's the next step after this particular consideration this evening? What happens next?
So following this, as mentioned with the previous project, this section of the project west of Meadow Creek is in the appealable zone. And so it would go, there would be a 49-day period during which anyone could bring an appeal on the project. And at such time, if there are no appeals, the project would be approved under the local approval. There are appeals. It would go forward to Coastal Commission for consideration.
Minor correction to that, if I could. It's a 10-day appeal period.
10-day appeal period.
And once the appeal is filed, there's a 49-day period to bring it to the Coastal Commission.
Minor detail I jumped over there. Thank you, City Manager Pearl.
Any other questions before I open it to the public? Then I'll go ahead and open this item to the public if any member wants to come forward and speak. I see Ms. Rudd appears to have left, so we'll bring it back to the council, close the public hearing, and for any discussion or a motion.
I'll move for staff's recommendation.
I'll second that.
We have a motion by Councilmember Marshall, a second by Councilmember Bright. Any other discussion? And roll call, please.
Yes.
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 Yes. Well, motion carries. So if we could have our Madam Mayor come back and join us.
So we're on to our consent agenda, and these are routine items that are scheduled for consideration as a group, and the recommendations for each item are noted in parentheses. Members of the audience may speak on any items on the consent agenda, and any council member, the city attorney, or the city manager may request that an item be withdrawn from the consent agenda to allow for full discussion. Items which are withdrawn will be placed and heard at the end of the items previously scheduled on the regular business schedule. Do any council members or any staff members want to?
Just as a point of order, Mayor, item 11 has a new resolution that's been circulated. Staff doesn't want to pull it, but just to make sure that you're aware of it.
I noticed that, and I actually wanted to pull that one. Did anybody else want to pull anything?
I had one question on item 11 also, but it's a minor question.
Well, we'll pull it, and then we'll both ask our questions. So it sounds as if we're good for items 7 through 10, and we also have item 12. So 7 through 10 and 12. So is there someone
who'd like to... I'll make a motion that we accept the consent agenda items 7 through 10 and 12 as presented.
I will second that motion, but I would like to make a comment also on item number 10. I would like to compliment the police chief and whoever he's got working with him, but according to the report, the work that's being done over there, I understand, is being done by you and your staff. Great job. I commend you for undertaking this, and it really, really helps. Thank you so much.
So that begs a question for me. When's it going to be done?
Yeah.
Okay, 2 weeks. We can have the grand tour. Okay. We can all come in and get fingerprinted. All righty. So we have a motion from Councilmember Lee. Was that right? Oh, sorry. Councilmember Bright, I'm sorry. And a second by Councilmember Nichols. Could we have roll call, please?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. And so we will hear, that was a unanimous, and we will hear item number 11 after item number 16, which moves us now to item number 13, which is appointment to the Planning Commission, and Community Development Director Buckingham will cover that for us.
Mayor, members of the council, the City of Grover Beach Planning Commission is a 5-member board that makes land use decisions on development projects and also makes recommendations to the City Council. Commissioners are appointed by the City Council to serve a 4-year term. Last year, Commissioner Alex's term expired, but he continued to serve until the selection project was completed, which was delayed considerably. The City Council has an advisory body screening committee which interviews prospective applicants and makes recommendations to the full council. On March 6th, the screening committee, consisting of Mayor Peterson, Mayor Pro Tem Lee, and Planning Commission Vice Chair Bloom, conducted interviews with 4 applicants for the expired term. It should be noted all 4 applicants were qualified and were eager to serve the citizens of Grover Beach. At the conclusion of the interviews, the screening committee recommendation is that the City Council reappoint Greg Alex to the Planning Commission. That concludes the report.
Thank you. Are there any questions of staff?
No.
Okay. Anybody from the public want to come forward? Greg, did you want to say anything to us?
Thank you, Mayor and Council members. It's been a pleasure for the last 5 years serving the community, and been a pleasure to do the serving of the city and the challenges that we've come across with both the lodge and the Grand Avenue plan. And so it's been a pleasure serving, and I would love to continue, and honored to do so. If you'll have me, I would love to serve you. Thank you.
Thank you. Anybody else from the public want to come forward on this one? Nope. Okay, we'll close it. And I wondered if were there any comments before we make a motion?
I have a comment. Mm-hmm. First of all, thank you so much. We really appreciate what you do. Well, Debbie and I have both served mm-hmm. on the Planning Commission for a good long time, so we know the kind of time and dedication it takes, so we really do appreciate it. And I was so pleased to see that we had four applicants. Mm-hmm. That's marvelous, and it just really warms my heart to know that we have folks out there who want to serve, and then for you to want to continue is just really wonderful. We really appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Any other comments?
I'll just make one quick comment. I sat with Greg on the Planning Commission. I'm pleased to see he's upping.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. And so I will definitely be supporting this. Is this a resolution? I believe it is. I'll be and I'll just continue on and say I'll move for staff's recommendation on this.
Second.
Okay, so we have a motion and a second, and I did want to comment too. And we had four great applicants come forward, and it was great getting to know some of the good, really great people in the city a little bit better. And what surprised me most was that I think every single one of them said they're Channel 20 junkies. They all watch us on television. So thanks, you guys. And also, I think particularly with Greg Alex, he has actually taken a good deal of training associated with this particular appointment, and I was very impressed by that, and I think that must make him a much better Planning Commissioner because of it. So, and I'll say, Glenn, yes, we served with you too, and thank you.
No, it's fine.
I think we've got a motion and from Councilmember Marshall and a second from Councilmember Bright, and this is a roll call.
Yes.
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 Yes. Thank you. Congratulations.
And he's thanking us.
Thanks. Thank you.
Number 14 is report and request for direction regarding the city charter measure, and City Manager Perrault will be presenting.
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the council, and hopefully our video is going to work here shortly. There we go. This report is report regarding the city charter measure. And to begin with, I want to just explain a little bit about the difference between the different forms of municipal government in California. As the council is probably well aware, there are two forms of government in California, a general law and a charter city. General law derives its power from the general laws of the state and constitutionally authorized police powers. Collectively, then, for all intents and purposes, state law serves as the city's constitution. Charter city is a bit different. I will note that it is also authorized by the state's constitution, but it also allows the city to draft its own constitution, and the charters tend to provide a city with greater control over items that are considered to be local affairs. Those matters that are considered to be statewide affairs are left with the state. There was an independent citizens committee report on charter measures. That committee was chaired by local resident Mr. Steve Lieberman. As the council will recall, a presentation was made in December 13. The Citizens Committee recommended placing a charter measure on the November 2014 ballot. They also recommended using the draft, the 2012 draft charter as a base. That's the one that had previously gone to the electorate in November of 2012 and was narrowly defeated by 4 votes. On January of actually this year, not last year, not next year, council directed staff to revise the draft charter using committee recommendations and to schedule a public workshop. The public workshop was scheduled for Wednesday, March 5th, 2014. There were about a dozen people in attendance at those meetings. Attached to this report, you're going to find their comments. There were also some materials that they requested be distributed along with their comments, and those are also attached for your review. I wanted to cover some of the key provisions of the revised charter. Again, this is the revised charter that was based on the recommendations that the committee provided you with in December. One is that this the local form of government structure is essentially going to remain the same. We currently operate under a council-manager form of government, and that will continue. Council will continue to consist of 4 council members and a mayor directly elected at large. Council members and the mayor must meet a 6-month residency requirement according to the revised charter. Let's see here. Did I miss one? Council members and mayor are to, according to the revised charter, are to follow a code of ethics, and this code of ethics is to be separately adopted by the council by either resolution or ordinance. Council member compensation and term limits do not change. The city does have a policy statement in the revised document that the city will continue to encourage the development of legislation and policies in support of local development. The city would have the power to develop its own bidding and purchasing processes if it is in the best interest of the city to adopt those separately. That would essentially exempt ourselves from state contracting procedures, allows us some flexibility in the local adoption of purchasing and contracting procedures. The city would encourage the adoption of programs in support of local businesses and businesses that promote the employment of local residents. Another provision of the revised charter would support the use of volunteers on local projects. Prevailing wage was a big discussion going back to the committee process. And just to update you on the state of the law, the state of the law provides that all charter cities can actually exempt themselves from prevailing wage requirements for locally funded projects, public works projects. But there was law passed last year that essentially limits the ability of a charter city to exempt itself, because if it chooses to exempt itself from current state law relative to prevailing wage, it would lose all state or state or federal funding. So there's a limitation currently in the state law as applied to how charter cities could exempt itself. Given the state of this law, by the way, I should indicate has been challenged and is now in the courts, and it's expected that it'll probably take a couple of years to resolve that challenge. The committee discussed this issue quite a bit, and the committee, as you'll recall, had broad representation. There was local representation from local residents and local residents that were labor affiliated, as well as business owners and contractors. Ultimately, the committee could not reach a consensus on how to deal with or recommend that the council deal with prevailing wage, but did offer some alternatives in their recommendations. Staff took those alternatives and developed three options for the council's consideration. The first option is to incorporate language that provides the city with the ability to exempt itself from prevailing wage. This is pretty much the language that had existed or existed in the 2012 draft. So essentially, it is pretty much the same. The second option for your consideration is to incorporate language that the city will require all public works project contractors to pay prevailing wage for all contractor employees working on public works projects. So essentially, regardless of what happens with the state law, the city would be making a statement regarding the use of prevailing wage. The third alternative is to incorporate language that would essentially allow the council, by separate ordinance or resolution, to establish rules pertaining to the payment of prevailing wage. So those are the three options that are available to you. Should the council, there are several alternatives that are available to the council. The council could direct staff to make language changes to the draft charter, which would include incorporating any one of the three options regarding prevailing wage, and then initiate the public review process. And I want to indicate that, as the council's aware, that public review process is fairly extensive. It's about a 90-day process. It takes a couple of public hearings and a final item on the agenda at the end of the process that would actually authorize the measure to go forward. The purpose of the extended formal review process is obviously to allow the public to participate and be further involved in the deliberations, the council's deliberations relative to the charter. It also has some very unique public hearing, public noticing requirements. First public hearing cannot be held short of a 21-day notice period. And then there's a 30-day period between the first and the second public hearing, and then a final 21-day period between the second public hearing and the time that the item is finally before the council. In order to make all of that work, just so you're aware, if the council chooses to move forward at this point, we're looking at needing to complete council action on the item by July 21st, I believe. And that is a very tight schedule, but it's manageable. And using the council meetings we have between now and then, we would be able to make that time frame, I believe, without actually holding any special meetings. So, again, to reiterate, the council has choices to make. One is to direct staff to make language changes to the draft charter and initiate that public review process. The council could accept the current language without making any changes at this point and indicate that the formal review process should begin. I will note to you focus to work with both of those items, but I just wanted to make you aware of that particular situation. The other item is obviously costs. I've included that in the fiscal impact section of the staff report. There will be some initial costs associated just with the public hearing process, should you wish to continue. Will amount to approximately $5,000. That's just noticing time, putting together staff reports, doing informational items, et cetera. And then it'll cost roughly about $10,000 actual cost to place the item on the November 2014 ballot. That's based on the experience we had last time around. So I expect that those costs would be pretty close to valid. Essentially, that concludes staff's report. I myself, city attorney, are available to answer any of the questions that you may have. You have some of the committee members present that made the recommendations back in December, and you have some other members of the public that I'm sure will want to address you on this item.
Madam Mayor. Are there questions of staff?
Nope. I have one, possibly two. Thank you for that update.
Maybe three.
Maybe three. Exactly. I noticed, so this is not the first of our required three public hearings. Okay, so technically we'll have those three hearings if we move forward.
Right.
We'll have had this hearing. We'll have had a public session back in March and workshop and then one in January. So if anybody wants to or continues to address us on this issue, they're going to have plenty of time to do it.
That's correct. The item that's before you tonight is basically to make a threshold decision on continuing with the item forward.
Okay. And then, which leads directly into my second question, is on the section of prevailing wage, we have three options. Do we have to choose one of those options tonight to move forward?
It probably would be preferable simply because then you have a completed draft to actually present to the at that first public hearing.
Okay.
But I don't think it's absolutely required that you make that decision at this point.
Okay. Only two.
Well done.
Mayor, if
I'm, sure.
I think your question was, I hope I'm wrong, your question was we have to choose one of those three options?
And from what I understood, that if it would be preferable for us to choose one of those three options, but it's not required.
That's also, I know where Councilmember Nichols is going, and certainly you can change this language. This ultimately needs to be your language, and the council needs to feel comfortable with whatever language you choose to go forward with, and that's really up to the council. These are just presented as three alternatives for your consideration.
Yeah, I think what we're trying to do is make sure we have the draft
complete.
Okay.
Right. So so where you're going with all of that is that we don't have to choose one of three. We can do number four, five, or six if we like.
Correct.
That's our
That was my point.
Prerogative.
Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you. Got it. Any questions down at this end?
No.
Okay. I did have a question, and this is perhaps moving forward where we haven't yet, but if we were to decide to move forward with the charter, can you give us an idea of what dates we would be doing those various hearings? Have you thought that through?
We have. I don't happen to have them with me, but if we started today, the first public hearing, I believe, would be held in the first meeting in May.
Okay. So that would be May 5th.
Right.
All righty. And then there's a
21
days. So that would
actually be, it's a
30-day
period between the first and the second public hearing. So you would be looking at your second public hearing occurring at a council meeting in June, followed by the third meeting in July.
Okay. All right. And I think I did have a question, actually. This is kind of a complex one, a couple of questions. First of all, we've been given three options here, but there was another option that had been discussed earlier on, and that was we have one, two, and three, but there was one: the city will require all contractors completing public works projects that are locally funded to compensate project employees using compensation rates in accordance with state and federal law.
If I remember, that was the actual committee's recommendation.
Mm-hmm.
And I think in drafting it, everything has to be in keeping with state law. So we thought.
I wasn't quite sure if we had addressed her concern there or her suggestion.
Uh,
I'm trying to recall, and I actually thought...
Was it 301?
I think it was 301.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, so there's a... Okay, yeah. So it's 301.
And that's correct.
So it did get modified.
Okay, good. And 304, then... Okay. I'm fine with that, then. Thank you. That's clear now. We'll open this up to the public if there are no more questions from the council, if you wouldn't mind giving us your city of residence and your name. And we have two speakers who requested to come forward. I believe Mr. Weiner asked to come first, and after that, Michael Lopez. And then anybody else who'd like to come forward is welcome to do so.
I'm back. My name is Steve Weiner. I'm the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Tri-Counties Building Construction Trades Council, out here representing construction workers in this area, union and non-union workers. Again, non-union workers are unorganized, so they cannot speak up for themselves. They don't have the time to come on down. I'm going to be real brief tonight, as you've heard many of our concerns over and over and over again. Hopefully it's going to sink in and you're going to listen to us one of these days. Over the past year, we provided information, testimony from workers, contractors, contracting groups, community organizations, and citizens of Grover Beach on the benefits of prevailing wage. We've given you studies from around California. One specific study involves the two libraries, one up in Palo Alto and the other in Gilroy. One built prevailing wage and the other without. The one with prevailing wage was completed on time and on budget. You'll never guess about the one without prevailing wage. In fact, it's still under construction today, and it was supposed to be completed in 2012. I think you handed this out to everybody, the Mitchell Park Library, the one that was built without prevailing wage. They just threw the contractor off back in January or February, and now it's going out to rebid to get a contractor to come on in to fix all the mistakes so they can hopefully open it up in a short period of time. The other report that we gave you was from the city of La Mirada, and basically what it says is that after examining the prevailing wage with the new laws, that there's very little difference between charter cities and general cities now. And it says that they have not identified a compelling reason to pursue the adoption of a charter in that city. They have that report too.
Yes.
That's thank you. So what we're here tonight, we're asking you that if you do move forward on the charter and put it on the ballot, that you use option. I know it's going to be a surprise to everybody, but option number two, that the city will pay prevailing wage on all construction projects. It's the right thing to do for the community and for the workers. And I've been at many of these meetings, and you know, I've heard it said that prevailing wage is a real small part of this charter. So it seems to me that it would be in the best interest of the city to support prevailing wage if you want to get this charter passed, because the building trades would much rather work with you and get a charter passed than work against you and oppose it in the election. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Lopez?
Good evening. Mr. Weiner opened with, he's back. I almost didn't make it back. I suffered a heart attack last weekend. Wow. And the last thing I remember closing my eyes in the ER Monday morning was looking around and thanking God there were no volunteers in there. Everybody there actually knew what the hell they were doing, performed their job, did what they were trained to do, and produced a product. Me, back alive amongst y'all. We're professionals. We study. We go to school. We're not self-governed. We're governed by dictates from the state. The instructors in our training facilities are state-sanctioned instructors for the building trades. It's a 5-year commitment to become a trained construction worker. The alternative is zero. Please, look at the responsibility you have to build a facility for your community. It's a long-term deal. We're not building a shed in the back of the yard to put your lawnmower in. This is something that's going to be a testament to the leadership of this community around quality and something that's got to last for decades. It's not union versus non-union. This is about a surviving living wage, a real living wage. It's a fantasy to think. One of you council people, I forget, a meeting or so back mentioned that prevailing wage is really an insignificant part of this whole argument. Nonsense. It's the only part of this argument. At least stand up and say it. It's true, because we have countless reams of information that prove that it monetarily has never been advantageous to go that route. It's an idea that's being sold, and you're being sold a bill of goods. Look around at supporting the community. Let's not do what potentially is going to happen on this this project we talked about earlier about forcing some of our constituents out of having access to beach. Let's not force our local labor people out of the potential of having jobs in this area. And let's stop bringing people in from out of the community to do the work that rightfully belongs to us.
Thanks,
in
Mr.
this
Lopez.
Community. Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else who wanted to come forward? Nope. Okay, seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the council for discussion. Well, Bill, you're our most senior council member. Would you like to weigh in first?
Yes. My opinion is that the charter is drafted that has been presented to us, I think, is well done. The only changes that need to be made, in my opinion, are Section 301 and 302. I've looked at this long and hard. I personally, and I ask that each of you get a copy of the wording that was put in the Arroyo Grande charter, and I think it's excellent. I think it's a little softer than the language that we have. It's a little softer than the options that we have. I personally believe that this is very well written. I think it's a little more detailed. The Section 301 that we have currently in the draft, I think, is very general. I think the one in Arroyo Grande's is a lot more specific. And my thought is I would really ask that we put Section 301 and 302 that currently are before you that I had copied into our charter, and with the rest of the information that is in that charter, the draft, I think it should stay the way it is. That's the only changes I would make, and I would encourage you to take a good hard look at 301 and 302 that are before you and see if we can't incorporate that into our charter. That would
so
be my recommendation.
So the 301 or 302 that are before us, did you hand those out? Or
wait, no. Oh. We.
They were on the...
It's the attachment.
When we got here.
Oh, I guess... I don't know if I have
it's the last one.
Okay. Here we go. Okay. So I think it would be helpful. I'm just thinking, how do we allow people to hear this before we make the decision on it? And I'm not sure how we do that, but let's continue discussion and put that to one side for now, and we'll take comments from other folks. Did any of you have a chance to read this?
Not really.
Okay. No.
All right.
Not fully.
No. Okay. So that makes it kind of difficult.
Well, it basically says the same thing as what we have now, except it's a little more detailed and as I say, a little softer.
Is softer better?
I think so, yes. My personal opinion. I would ask you, it'd only take you about 60 seconds to read it, if you would do so.
I'm going to ask you to, can you read that out loud, or could someone read that out loud? Because I think the public need to hear it, too.
Yeah, I'd be more than glad to.
Okay.
Under Section 301, Public Works Contracts, the city shall follow the provisions of the California Public Contract Code and its standards, procedures, rules, or regulations relating to the bidding, award, and performance of any public works contract, except that the city shall have the power to establish by ordinance alternative standards, procedures, rules, or regulations for public projects in the following areas. And there are four of them. One, the City Council may, by ordinance, establish criteria for determining the award of public works contracts to the lowest, responsible, and most reliable bidder on any project, as well as other aspects of bidding, award, and performance of any public works contract that it deems to be in the best interest of the city, including but not limited to the compensation rates to be paid for the performance of such work. Two, the city shall have the power to exceed. The City Council does not consider the project to be municipal affair.
Thank you. That's helpful. I'm wondering if staff could explain the City Council does not consider the project to be a municipal affair. How could any city project not be a municipal affair?
And we're attempting to attribute a thought process to staff at AG, so that's a little...
No, but we have that somewhere, too.
A project is not a municipal affair if it has a statewide concern. Projects related to things that are under the purview of the state that have an effect outside of the city boundaries, those are things that are not municipal affair. They're projects that do not only involve the city.
So, for instance, doing something with the courthouse, would that be considered? Well, that's a county.
Actually, if I could, it would be, and let me take an attempt at it. A statewide affair would be something that the city is undertaking that is common to the entire state. And I guess it might be difficult to, because items that are matters of statewide concern and local concern are under the review of the courts all the time and are really being redefined. An example might be, and maybe the city attorney will disagree with me, but that each city has to develop an affordable housing project, and each city is required to do that. Affordable housing could be said to be a statewide affair. It's important to everyone throughout the state to accomplish that project. So in that case, if it is a statewide affair, then the prevailing wages would in all cases need to be paid. So that's an attempt to add an example.
The only distinction that I would draw, not disagreeing with the city manager, but the language here does not speak anywhere about a statewide affair. It only speaks about what city council considers to be not to be a municipal affair.
Oh. I see. Okay.
Doesn't necessarily mean a statewide affair.
Thank you. And had you the chance, City Attorney, to review this before our meeting this evening?
I did not, Mayor.
So are you able to comment in any way at this point on it?
I would prefer not to. And what I think the council, as city manager, identified, we're looking today to move forward if the council wishes to move forward. We're looking for you, for the council, to make a decision. We will have three more meetings, public meetings, on this language. And this language is not frozen starting today. Actually, exactly the opposite. Through the public process, it may reach different shape. So even if, for example, the council wishes to follow Councilmember Nichols' suggestion and insert this language into the initial draft, it will provide the staff with the ability to review it, along with a number of other items in the language that the committee proposed, and just to button down all the legalities and make sure that if there are concerns that they can be identified as we move forward through the process. But today, we're basically looking for the threshold decision whether or not the council wishes to move forward with the process of putting the charter to the vote, postpone it, do something other than that. And again, the language is probably at this point the least, I'm going to say the least important, but it's not something that will that has to be set in stone. That part will continue to flex at your pleasure.
Thank you. And I'm wondering if anybody knows whether or not the Charter Committee did consider the Arroyo Grande wording. Was it in place at the time the Charter Committee was meeting?
I don't believe it was.
Okay.
Going through the drafting process at about the same time.
Okay.
But I don't think it had reached any finality to the point where it was brought forward to the committee.
So the committee hasn't weighed in on this wording yet.
Having said that, unless we're going to really say what we're going to do, then I think we're just doing the same thing over again. Mm-hmm. So, and then also, I'm kind of leaning towards the prevailing wage issue. I think if that's the law, that's the law, and we'll just go with it. And then if our citizens don't want that later on, that's what then they'll tell us so. So that's my opinion on.
So you're leaning towards option one option two?
Option two in somewhere in that something, yeah, like that. I don't know if it would be exactly that wording, but something along those lines.
Okay. Council Mayor Pro Tem Lee?
I wasn't sure which direction you were going to go.
Well, I wasn't either. I was trying to go by seniority.
That means you would be next.
Yes, but
so
I get to go last.
You get to go last, exactly. So, I'll start off by saying that I'm supportive of moving this forward for the purposes of continuing the public hearing process and moving forward. I'll still have a question as to whether the it's going to be appropriate or a good decision to put both of these on the ballot, the general obligation bond and the charter, on at the same time, or whether we delay one or fast forward one to this election and one to the next election. Sorry, the city manager or city attorney is going to go, we can't fast forward an election. So we'll keep it on, whether depending upon which elections, we keep it on realizing that both of them need to be in general obligation elections, or general elections, rather. I am leaning towards some direction towards what Councilman Nichols was saying with regards to 301, along with Councilmember Bright. I am still open-minded about prevailing wage. I've heard arguments on both sides, and I'm going to waylay my final decision on that until as we continue going forward. I think the part that says let's support prevailing wage is the fact that this really is about a larger issue than just prevailing wage. It's about the charter. I know prevailing wage is a large issue concerning this, but the charter as a whole, I believe, does better things for our city than just prevailing wage. There's more elements to that than that. Realizing that obviously is the touchstone topic that brings people to the table for discussion. Now I'm going to change directions completely and ask a question of the folks that were here the last time we did a charter. I don't recall the discussion with regards to the term for mayor. So the current term for mayor is 2 years versus 4 years for council members. So with a two-year clause or two-year terms for term limits, so which effectively means a mayor terms out in the one effect of a council member's term. Do we want to consider changing that, the mayor's term, to a four-year term? Was there, I recall there was some discussion last time, but I don't remember what the final decision was as to why you kept a two-year term.
I think the committee recommended that we not put this in the charter at this time. that we not make any changes. That was the committee's recommendation, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
Yes, relative to that issue.
That's what I mean, to that issue, correct. Mm-hmm.
That was my recollection, too. It raises a question. If the council were to agree that we, not necessarily in the charter, but that we wanted to go for a four-year term for the office of mayor, which incidentally wouldn't affect me, so I can vote on it. Would that mean then amending the charter if we don't put it in the charter? Which would it would have to go to a vote either way, though.
It would need to go to the vote either way. If it wasn't in the charter, then you wouldn't need to amend it. If you chose to add to it, you could. In either event, it would be an election.
Except that if it was, if the charter says that we're doing, we're retaining the existing terms, and the council was to change their minds, then charter decisions can only be at general elections.
Yeah, if the charter says that you're retaining your existing terms.
Right.
I don't recall
and actually
that language.
It doesn't.
That's
it's
not
I don't recall that language.
Okay.
It's not addressed. It just, my point in including that is the way it's phrased now, it would not change terms.
Okay.
And terms right now are in accordance with state law and were voted on by the electorate and are consequently found in our municipal code. Even though you change a charter, it doesn't mean that that throws out your municipal code. That section of the code would still be in
when it would be voted on. But I think that we should continue the conversation.
Uh-huh.
And I agree. I'm not ready yet to state an opinion as far as the wording of Arroyo Grande versus what wording we've had here until I've had a chance to review it and, of course, until the city attorney can weigh in and
exactly.
and the charter committee. So I will, since Councilmember Bright said let's say what we think, I will still stand by my statement that if this is a matter that has enough importance to us that we want to do it, it's got to be for more than just the prevailing wage. Mm-hmm. And that originally was where we started. We didn't start with that. We started with the desire for independence, the desire to determine our own financial viability out with the state. And so I would still support that. And of course, for the union members, prevailing wage is the only important matter or the most important matter. However, I would reiterate a couple of things. One is that countywide, 12% of our contractors are union members. 88% are not. It's a very small percentage. And I don't want our charter, which is a bigger thing, to be dictated by 12% of the people who may be affected by a small or a part of our charter. I won't say it's small, but by a part of our charter. And I also would state that in my experience, whether or not many of our contractors in town or in the county are union workers, I think they do good work. I've been happy with their work. And so I'm not going to buy in on if it's not union, it's not good. I certainly can say if it is union, I know it'll be, in most cases, very professional. But we've had the same bad experiences with unions and the work that's being done as the unions are telling us they've had with folks who are not union members. So that being said, sounds like we have consensus that we do want to move forward the conversation. We'd like the city attorney to take a look at this Section 301 and weigh in, maybe at the next meeting, or give us some feedback on it. Am I right about that?
Yes.
And maybe we can also ask the committee if they would weigh in on that.
Madam Mayor, the committee is pretty much disbanded.
Right. Okay. Well, if they have issues, I'm sure they'll come to the meetings anyway. Or if they have remarks or questions or suggestions, I'm sure they'll continue to participate, and we hope they will. Okay. Are we good? Is that the direction? I don't think we needed this. Was it by motion to move forward? Do we need to roll call?
Well, you will need a motion to move forward and to initiate the public review process. Just for clarification purposes, Is there any specific way you would like us to deal with the current, what we have here in the current 301, 302, in terms of moving this forward? How would you like that to appear as a draft, if you will? And remember, it is not anything that is beyond changing at this point.
Towards that end, I'm going to throw out something and see how many tomatoes I get thrown at me by members up here. We've always had in our charter a exemption of prevailing wage in 302. Which has obviously brought strong opposition from the unions in here. For the purposes of moving forward to see if we get a differing opinion, I would almost recommend that we, for the purposes of this initial discussion, we include option two, which basically puts it on the street as the city is going to move forward with prevailing wage and see if we get any public reaction saying, oh, my God, no, we don't want prevailing wage, or we don't get any response at all. It's simply a means to see if there's another voice out there that hasn't been heard yet by putting different language in here, realizing we can change it, we can move it, we can modify it throughout the process. Just an alternative.
Are you suggesting exclusively to and leaving the other options out?
For the purposes of the first draft, yes.
I disagree with that wholeheartedly. I think you're looking for trouble.
I disagree with it too, because at this point we certainly don't have a majority, as far as I can tell, on the council for the other option. So I think it would be untruthful almost to do that exclusively. It certainly needs to be on the table still.
In 301, 302, option 1 and 2 for further consideration. And then you have the city attorney in the interim review the 301 and 302 as proposed by Arroyo Grande and make some additional recommendation that will come forward at that public hearing.
I think that sounds good. Is everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
I think that's a good solution. We're on board, unanimous on board with that suggestion.
So that would, for the time being, eliminate 3. Yep.
That's fine.
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
That simplifies it. We can come back. As you've said, this is not cast in stone.
Yeah.
All righty. Okay. I think we've given staff direction. That's what you asked us to do. Everybody clear?
Should we do that by motion? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. We've got the direction then. And we'll begin the public hearing process. The first public hearing will be scheduled for the first meeting in May, which I believe is May 5th.
May 5th, and then the June one is June 16th, is 30 days. And then July, the 30-day one, was...
That's only needing to be 21 days.
Oh, okay.
Gravy.
So
very confusing.
I didn't figure out 21 days for July then. But we'll cross that bridge when we come to it.
Even then, you couldn't really keep it uniform, because you're still talking about doing different criteria and guidelines.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it wouldn't be in that uniform. But it'd be nice to have a contractor go from two adjacent cities like this and expect the same rules to some extent.
That would be nice.
Well, we don't do it with planning departments.
Really
we don't do it with laws and ordinances. Why?
It's true, huh?
It ain't broke. Well,
yeah, I know.
Maybe it is broke. Okay.
It's too darn simple.
Right.
Far too easy.
Yeah, I know.
We're doing it with the fire authority.
This is true.
Number 15, then, is the budget outlook, and City Manager Peralt is going to provide a report regarding preliminary estimates of budget reviews and expenditures for the city's major funds in the upcoming fiscal year.
Yes, Madam Mayor, members of the council, as you've indicated, the purpose of this particular report is to give you a first real outlook as to what the budget is going to entail. We're in the midst of developing it right now, and it'll continue to be a process that will continue to change and morph a bit as we get down to the actual budget hearing process. Essentially, what I wanted to do was to be able to update you with the most recent revenues and estimated expenditures by major fund. I'm not asking for any direction. This is informational only. And as you will note in the report, what we're looking at is the very next step will be a public hearing to review the work program and goals. That'll take place at your next meeting, and then following that, once we have your direction, we'll really begin to mold the budget and bring it back for, actually we expect it'll be available for public distribution probably in early May, and that hearings will be held in the May to June timeframe. So the budget will be adopted well before the time frame of July 1st, and that's actually required by your own municipal code. So just for your information, so we're going to take a look at each of the major general funds, major funds of the city. The general fund, as the council is aware, is the single largest fund that the city has. The approved budget that we're operating on right now is $7.388 million. It is the main provider of services for the city, and that includes everything from police, our contribution to the Five Cities Fire Authority, planning, public works, et cetera, Parks and Recreation Administration. All of those are funded directly out of the general fund. As I usually do, I'll note again for you that this is the smallest general fund budget of any of the incorporated cities within the county of San Luis Obispo. And just so you know, you have the smallest number of employees as well. Give you an example, contrasting it with Morro Bay. Morro Bay's budget is much closer to, general fund budget is much closer to $10 million, and they have at least the last 3 years. That's due in part based on the concessions that you've also received from the employees in the form of primarily furloughs. Within the last year, the general fund has seen a modest increase in its revenue, very, very slow recovery period, and we've talked about that before. But what it was able to do for us in this past year is that we were actually able to take our employee furlough days from 16 to 7. So that was a significant improvement. In the current fiscal year, we're continuing to project a slight improvement in the general fund. This is coming because we are anticipating an increase in the secured property tax. That is of about 3%. That's pretty much in line with the county's assumptions, and we've reviewed their work, and we took the same path last year in recommending a slight increase, and it actually came very close to that. Sales tax is projected to be fairly static. We're looking at only a very modest increase in the base sales tax from $750,000 to $784,000. So all total, our revenues are expected to be, as I've said, slightly increased, and they're expected to be slightly over $7.5 million. Expenditures are expected to come in. At this point, the expenditures that we're looking at are slightly below the revenue amount. So at this point in time, we're almost in a balanced position. But I need to let you know that the reason for that is that we are not adding any new at this point. There are no new personnel, no new purchases of any type. We're really looking at a status quo budget. So essentially what we're saying is that without any modifications, we're very close. And again, remembering that these are only preliminary estimates and certainly are subject to change. The other element I did want you to note is the expenditures at this point anticipate doing away with the furlough program, but it's important to know that that will be the subject of a future meet and confer process. So ultimately, you're going to need to deal in the general fund as we go through the budget process with several competing issues. You have, obviously, employee compensation. As I've said, that will be a matter of meet and confer. But you're going to have to make decisions regarding adding employees back. I mean, we've cut back in several areas, and we're going to need to identify where we need to very slowly and gradually add staff back into the mix. Additionally, there's going to be a need to start making some decisions regarding deferred equipment purchases and facilities maintenance. So all of that, though things are improving ever so slightly, there's going to be a need for diligence and some real decision making on the part of the council. Essentially, you know, we're positive about the general fund, but please remember it's a very, very close situation. Our reserve funds right now at the beginning of the new fiscal year, we're anticipating that they'll be at about $2.2 million. And it's important to note that that's an improvement. In previous years, we'd actually used reserves to cover some of our operating costs. That's something that we would not recommend that the council do. The council is required to maintain a minimum of 20% in your reserves. And ultimately, this is the current amount in reserves is probably closer than to 29%. But it's important to keep in mind that when you're dealing with a small budget, $2 million worth of reserves can be used up very, very rapidly if you have one significant. It is looking as if it'll have $3.3 million in revenues based on our current rates and $3.1 million roughly in expenditures. And what makes this budget balanced, however, is there is only $172,000 identified right now as capital expenditure. The reality is, as we go through this process, we know that there's much more capital needed in the budget than what you see presently. We know that, thankfully, we do have that CDBG grant coming in, and that's will put about $1.2 million in water improvements this next year in replacing lines, increasing their capacity from 2 to 8 inches, and that's needed for safety and health and safety concerns. So that'll be a great addition. But beyond that, you know, we're in a critical water period. We need to make sure that our water system is capable of using, making the best use or assisting us in making the best use of the current sources that we have, which include Lake Lopez and obviously the groundwater. We're looking at the possibility that the capital funds, as we go through the budget process, may increase up to about $500,000. That would then put that budget in a deficit standing, and we would need to take a look at whether an additional rate adjustment at that point would be necessary. The other factor about it is we're also participating with our colleague cities in the Northern Cities Management Area, and part of what we'll be looking for is how do we deal with both managing the short-term issues we have with our local resources to make sure that we're managing them correctly. And then we need to take another look collectively at how to deal with long-term solutions to the water issue. One of the things that is being talked about is actually needing to do a comprehensive groundwater model. That's something that has really was done in the North County and actually has helped Paso Robles make some decisions about what they needed to do. We need to do a model here so that we know what our actual groundwater base, our ground basin contains. And that's a significant expenditure. That expenditure would be shared with all the other participating entities, cities and the OCSD, but it's likely to also cost us an additional $200,000 to $300,000 for that level of participation. Groundwater studies are not cheap. They're about $750,000 all total. So, I, you know, that's some of the challenges that will be I'm laying out in the water area. These, as I've indicated, are preliminary figures and will be subject to further adjustment. Finally, wastewater. The big issue with wastewater will be the stormwater project, the stormwater program that we're required to implement as a result of state mandated permitting with our NPDES permit. We're expecting that those costs will increase to the other side of $250,000 in the coming year. We are collecting rates to stormwater fee to offset that, but it's likely to have to be increased at some point in the future. So overall, you know, it's a very gradual improvement, but there are going to be a whole number of challenges that the council is going to have to undertake in the coming months. And so this is just an option to get early information out to you and identify some of those issues that you'll likely be dealing with. If you've got any questions of me, I'd be glad to answer them.
Any questions for staff?
Just a quick one, Bob. So you're recommending that we look at increasing the reserves from 20% to 25?
25 possibly.
Yeah. Would you even consider going higher on that?
It's possible. One of the things I think we ought to do is take a look. We haven't looked to see what other cities are dealing with.
The amount of one of the reserves, the goal is to have an emergency reserve equal to 1 year's collection of the largest revenue source.
So that would be property tax.
Wow.
Which is $3
million. $3
million. Mm. Yikes.
Wow. So we have a very healthy upper limit then.
Yes.
We certainly do.
From that perspective. So, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. So would we really need to change our reserve policy? I guess the only way because right now we're at 29. Our minimum's 20, so we're meeting that criteria. I guess it would just be a matter of whether we wanted to make our minimum higher.
Right. And you have to remember that a minimum is considered a floor.
Right.
It's something that you don't want to go below. So that's why it's important to have, I think, a pretty firm floor as an adopted policy.
Okay. But if we did, and just for the purposes of questions, So let's say we changed it to 30. That would effectively give you less money to to deal with on a day-to-day operating basis to utilize in the operating budget.
Certainly, I would never recommend that reserves be used for recurring operating costs anyway.
Right.
What you would end up doing is right now you have three funds in your reserves. You have a contingency fund, an emergency fund, if I'm not mistaken, and the third gala is a what is the third one?
As Bob said, we do have three types of reserves. The first is the general contingency, mm-hmm. which is to not be less than 5% of the current year's general fund operating budget. It's to provide funding to meet operational appropriation requirements in the event of minor or routine unanticipated increases in expenditures. There is a general fund general reserve, which is 10%. Not less than 10% of the current fiscal year's general fund operating budget. Should be increased to higher when economic conditions warrant. The specific purpose of the general reserve is to provide funding to meet operational appropriation requirements in the event of the city experiences shortfall in the collection of general fund revenues or a major unanticipated increase in expenditures. The general fund emergency reserve is to be not less than 5% of the general fund operating budget. Let's see. The reserve is established for the purpose of providing emergency funds as a result of declaring an emergency or to fund an unanticipated urgent event affecting or threatening public health, safety, welfare of the city of Grover Beach. Mm-hmm. And that's one that I would recommend taking up. 5% mm-hmm. in the event of an earthquake may not be enough.
Mm-hmm. Good.
Thank you.
So then my last general question is, what would it take to change our reserve policy? Is it just a matter of, as part of the budget approval
the
process?
The council adopts by resolution the policies, the financial policies.
Okay. Thanks.
No
Councilmember Nichols? Nobody else? Okay. I didn't have any questions, so this was receive and file.
Right.
And I really liked that report this time. It was thorough, meaty, but it gave us a really good overview and kind of it helped us sort of start getting our thought processes going for the next round. So thank you for that, mm-hmm. and to both of you and Gayla. So next on our agenda is item number 16, which is the annual report on the status of the general plan, and Community Development Director Buckingham is going to present this one.
Actually, before he does that, if you don't mind, a gentleman from AGP, would you open the back door just to get a little air movement?
Are you falling asleep?
No, not falling asleep, just the coat's getting heavy.
It's hot.
It is hot.
It is warm. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Okay, I'm falling asleep.
Okay. Good move. Thank you.
Okay, I think we can go now.
Mayor, members of the City Council. Quick background, the state requires the city submit an annual report addressing the status of the general plan and the progress made towards implementing its goals and policies. This report has been prepared to summarize the progress that we've made in 2013 in implementing those goals and policies. In addition, if you don't recall from last year, we have expanded the annual report this year. We provided information related to development permits, building permits, population growth, and trying to start to kind of be able to look back over a 10-year period so you have more of a comparison of how the community is changing and how development activity is changing. We also added tables this year indicating all, but it would be a once an annual opportunity for the council to be able to review those policies. And then also for a couple of things, staff identifying through all those implementation measures things that we're not able to do because of staff resources, but also to assist the council then in setting priorities, because there may be things that have been forgotten that maybe bigger priority or should become a bigger priority and could then be programmed into council goals and programs. So with all that said, in March the commission did review this annual report Did not recommend any changes and forwarded it to you. And tonight, staff is recommending you receive and file this report and direct us to send it to the state. And I'd be happy to address any specific questions that you have on any of our accomplishments.
Great overview. Thank you. Specific questions from anybody?
No questions. Just it really is amazing how things have changed over the years. I mean, just amazing. So it was. I really enjoyed the report. Thank you. I'm going to take it home and I'm going to keep it.
Well, wait. Next year, there's going to be even more.
Wow. You shouldn't have said that.
Actually, just had one logistical question, as I am apt to do. I see in the first paragraph of your background, the must be submitted to the Governor's Office of Planning by April 1st.
Yeah. Yes, the annual report police will be after me, but we're going to submit it tomorrow. So
very good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Is it going to cost us money?
Nope.
Good.
Not a penny.
Good. Great. Glad to hear it.
And on that note, I would recommend that the City Council receive and file the report and direct staff to submit it to the state in accordance with statutory requirements.
I second that.
We have a motion from Mayor Pro Tem Lee and a second from Councilmember Bright that we receive and file, et cetera, et cetera. and this is a voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Okay, that's unanimous. And we now are going back to our pulled consent agenda item 11, which is the authorization to award contract for water meter reading services. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Ray, we made you stay late tonight. I didn't realize we were doing that. Okay.
I have the later
items. Oh, okay. Oh, well, then I'm glad we did it. Okay. Yeah. So I had a question on that, and I know that there was a small question from Council Member Marshall. Did you want to go first?
Sure.
No, I don't think so. I don't think we need it. We read it.
So, Greg, I was looking at Attachment 2. I don't know what it's a resolution. And it says the water fund is the source of the revenue of $5,900. And it says contractual obligations. I was just kind of reading through the water fund section. And then it's at the bottom, it says total general fund is $59.59. It all balances out. So my question really is, so do you use the water fund to pay the general fund to pay the contractor?
It's there.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, that explains it. Thanks. I just thought it was convoluted.
Got me again. So that item should be corrected. If we could line item that out and make that the water fund in the resolution and adopt it that way.
Easy. I'm done.
Good. Thanks. Catch. That's what you do for your day job, isn't it? You have to catch that stuff.
I just thought it was more convoluted than that, but it wasn't.
That was good. And my question was, it probably doesn't require even taking a look at how much of a difference it'll make financially to go to this new method as opposed to our existing badly functioning method. But I'm wondering, it is helpful to me to when I'm looking at it to know if we stay where we are, what would it cost us, and if we make the change, what's the difference?
Can you, Greg, talk a little bit about the dedication of public works employees that is required with the current process?
I can. So there's really two items. There's the cost of the current program, and then there's the staffing cost of the current program. And I'm not really sure which is more critical. The cost, there will be a cost savings to move to manual meter reading. Primarily because we will not be replacing radios and failing meters, which are now failing at a rate of approximately over 200 per read cycle. And they're very expensive. Just, the radios and the meters both are very expensive, and we're off warranty, so we're paying full price for them. But I think what also City Manager Peralt alluded to is that we really can't afford the staff time. And so we're talking about a typical read cycle, which occurs every month for half of the city at a time. We're talking about two public works employees.
The meters and or the radios was absolutely terrible. And I couldn't help but think that didn't we have some recourse? It cost us a lot of money. We all know that. It's been before this council over and over and over. And talking to Greg Ray and talking to the city manager, we talked to great length as to whether or not there was any possibility of recovering some of our cost in this. And I can say for the rest to the rest of the council and to the people that may be watching this that it's been vetted quite thoroughly, and there just is no way that we can do that. So it's not something that has been overlooked, in case somebody would say, why didn't they? If the situation is that bad, it has been thought about, looked at. City attorney's been brought into it with his opinion. So I just want you to know that it has been thought about, discussed, and vetted quite thoroughly.
Thank you. Any other questions, comments? No. Okay. I'm not going to open for public comment because there's no public tonight at this time. So I guess we're looking for a motion then.
Well, move for staff's recommendation with the only modification to modify the resolution, to correct the resolution.
And I'll second that because I pulled it. So we have a motion from Council Member Marshall and a second from the mayor. And could we have roll call on that, please?
Yes.
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 Yes. And just for the record, Mayor, Council Members, that would be the resolution. The second resolution was the one that was handed to you as an amended item.
Thank you.
Yes. So we're moving now to Council Committee reports. And one of these days I'm going to change these around so the same people don't always have to go first. But not tonight. Councilmember Bright, did you have reports for us?
Well, actually, I did, but I wasn't prepared. I thought it was going to be so late because of our extensive agenda. I didn't bring my reports. I thought I would have them next time around.
I think everybody's very happy. I did.
Were waiting with bated breath for my reports.
We were looking at the clock and hoping you would forget your reports and make a good decision for us. I did want to comment on the decision from the APCD to adopt that consent agreement, and I know that they had worked at length with some really top state level officials, with the Attorney General and California Air Resources Board and State Parks and all their attorneys, and they came up with some mediations, and that's what I had been trying to accomplish back in June and July of last summer, and unfortunately we didn't have a meeting in July, so we weren't able to address it, and it took longer with more money and more people. However, I think it's pretty momentous agreement between the parties, and I know that they've been working together really hard to do some mitigation. That's all been in the papers, and you can probably go out on the beach and see it. So, what they did was remove the permitting requirement from the dust rule. They set up some checks and balances and a means for state parks to be able to talk with a scientist mediator in the event of a disagreement with the APCD, and they also instituted that best practices, and those were all things that originally the city had requested back in 2011, and then finally the thing that I was most happy about was that the litigation process between state parks and the APCD is done, and they can focus their money now on mitigating, not litigating, and I'm really happy about that, because I think that we have things happening up on the Mesa now that we haven't had a chance to stop and look at. We've got 50,000 people on the Mesa now, and I'm sure that now there will be some other ways that we can help that air quality, and that's not my remit, it's the board's, but I did want to congratulate you on that unanimous decision.
Oh.
Well, you were one of a unanimous, so thank you for that. And
I'm glad that it's done.
Yeah, me too.
I think everyone is.
Yeah. Integrated.
Thank you for my report.
Oh. let's see. Jeff Lee is next. You.
And I didn't have any committee assignments.
Okay.
Or reports to do.
All righty. Mr. Marshall.
I had one on April 1st. We had a South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District meeting. Plant superintendent's report stated that they had a county environmental staff came out and reviewed the district's hazardous material business plan. They had some minor comments, but overall the inspection went well. We passed Resolution 2014-319, which increased the brine disposal fee, which I had mentioned previously, from 1 cent to 11 cents per gallon. And then we had a nice discussion on pending state legislation on water bonds. There's a number of them are out. Yeah. There's no action to be taken yet because they're all just so early.
It happened financially, so... It does seem to be on the table, and the League of Cities is supporting us, even though it's a district, yes. And it's not us.
That's right. Yeah, so, Tony's very active in it as well. You know, Tony.
Yeah,
Carr,
yeah, so. That's true, which is helpful.
Yes.
Yeah.
He'll be looking, as well Rick Sweet, the new general manager.
Yeah, yeah, Tony's doing a good job there. Okay, that's all you had?
That's it.
Okay, and Councilmember Nichols.
The only report I have is on the Five Cities Fire Authority. We did have the protest hearing last Friday, and I was quite surprised. I don't know if the room was set up the way it is right now, but I can tell you that all of the seats were full.
Wow.
There were, I estimated, somewhere around 60 people here to hear. We had not... as many speakers as I thought we would have. The vast majority of the people that attended were in support of the assessment measure. I was very pleased with that. The meeting moved very smoothly. It didn't take long at all, inasmuch as we only had three speakers that were negative. The rest were all in favor and chose not to speak because there was no need to. Meeting wrapped up very quickly, and following the meeting, the League of Women Voters from San Luis Obispo County immediately started the ballot tabulating, and that will continue through this week. They hope and expect to be finished with the tabulating possibly on Wednesday or Thursday. We have another meeting scheduled for April 18th. At which time we will announce the final on the tabulation count.
So how does that work with, I understand that the ability to vote has been extended to April 18th, so?
That is correct. Consulting firm sent out the ballots, and there was a misunderstanding by them. They put on the ballot that it had to be in by Friday, April the 18th. We had talked to them ahead of time and told them that we wanted this set up to end on April the 4th, and that's when we would have the scheduled public hearing, at which time the protest hearing, at which time we would have public comment. We would close public comment, and ballots would have to be turned in by that time at the end of that meeting. However, it was brought to our attention by a young lady who did receive her ballot, and she brought the envelope in with her, and apparently they put April the 18th, must be turned in by Friday, April the 18th, on all of the envelopes. So we don't foresee that as a problem.
Wow.
We had conversation with our attorney. We do not see it as a problem. We will continue. We did continue the protest hearing to April the 18th, at which time we will announce the end of the ballots. And if there are any to be turned in at that time, we will accept them.
So will there be some still floating in between now and the 18th? Or will it be
very possible.
Okay.
Yes.
So the League of Women Voters is going to have to stay...
Engaged.
Good word. I was better said than what I was going to say.
They will handle all ballots that come in, regardless of when.
Okay. So we're not going to have an indication now until the 18th, or
correct,
after, because they have to count.
It'll be Friday the 18th when we will have the announcement on the ballots.
Okay.
Final tabulation.
Okay.
Oh, so they're going to count right up until...
Correct.
Okay. Good show.
So does the contractor still get their bonus if it goes through, even if... I'm assuming that what I've been reading is correct, and maybe it's not, or what some of the stuff that if it wins, that the contractor gets a bonus. That's not true.
I did not see that.
That's not true. Well, I'm glad I asked that question because I want to make sure we've got the right information.
I was
going
to say I saw nothing about that. Nothing
consulting
came
firm?
To me.
Yeah,
I don't know where that came from.
There's the scuttlebutt is that if it wins, then the consulting firm gets a bonus.
Oh.
So I was thinking perhaps if they didn't get the dates right, they shouldn't get a bonus.
Well, they shouldn't.
Regardless. How interesting.
You're right,
I'm glad I asked you that question, because there's an awful lot of information going out there that's not correct. So, good. Thank you for that. Okay. Yeah.
Like, there you go. Cleared that one up.
Yeah, good. All right. Did you have any other reports, Councilmember Nichols?
No, that's it.
Okay. And I had EVC meeting, and the conversation was just feedback from Supervisor Meacham, who's been spending a lot of time in Sacramento trying to understand what the various options are with water and with a water bond, and very much the same lines that Councilmember Marshall said, which is it's all up in the air. Transit facility. So that's the RTA, and they've really vetted it carefully, and they've looked at it well, and I really like what they've done and where they're going with all of that. So I'm very very pleased about that one. The second meeting was SLOCOG, San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, and I should say that RTA is the Regional Transit Authority. So the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments had some interesting news for us regarding funding. I think the last meeting I said, okay, here's what's going to happen. This is what the board approved. But then it went back to various committees and to Caltrans, and some things changed. And I guess Glenn's probably aware of some of the changes, so you can correct me if I'm wrong on this. And I think our Public Works Director is as well. But the subcommittees and Caltrans all said that they didn't recommend at this point something which had previously been set aside for Grover Beach. They did not recommend that at this point we consider doing a study on whether or not we should have a roundabout at Highway 1 and Grand. And there had been some funding set aside for that, not just for that, but on other alternatives. And basically Caltrans said, well, you can't work with us. we're impossible. And everybody else seemed to agree, including the board. And so that's off the table, and I'm sure there are people out there who'll be thrilled that we're not going to have a roundabout. At least we could if we had some money, but there's no money coming to us. So that one's off the table.
Darn it.
Nothing to do with me. I didn't touch that one. The other one is the funding of the train station expansion, which would be another 40 parking spaces on top of the 200, almost 300 we have already, which is another positive thing. That funding source has changed, but we get a tiny bit more by changing the funding source. I know it makes staff a little uncomfortable because we don't have all the money we need yet for our train station expansion, but Rhonda Carley says we're going to get it. And so far he's been good on that kind of stuff that's really important. So we're going to all have faith.
So what is the difference in the funding, if you don't mind me asking?
I do mind you asking, because I can't remember. It was a little bit. Do you remember? It wasn't enough that I even paid any attention to it.
Okay, that's fine. You didn't even need to get up.
No, it's a good question.
No.
It's a good question.
Okay, it's always on. Good. Interesting. The item you brought up earlier, the purchase of the property for the CAPSLO and the RTA bus facility, they needed money. They needed money that was immediately available.
Yes.
And that could be spent on that kind of a project. We had Prop 1B grant funding in the amount of $1 million. A large portion of that is now going to go, and that was Prop 1B money, in amount of $1 million for our train station expansion project. $600,000 of that will now be going to the purchase of that property. In exchange, we will receive $1 million of CMAQ funding. And CMAQ funding is mitigation funding for air quality. And it's interesting, very few, it's hard to find a project that is going to fit for that kind of funding. It just happens, though, expanding the train station, which would, in fact, take vehicles off the road and increase ridership potentially on the train, would qualify. And so the TAC, the SLOCOG TAC, grudgingly agreed, yours in particular, to allow the transfer of the funding. And so we actually received more funds, but a different kind of money, some of the challenges being that it may be harder to spend. But still, we'll take money.
So are you saying we're getting 1.6 instead of just one?
That's correct.
Cool.
So I guess my sums weren't very good. We're getting a lot more money.
Yeah. It is a lot more.
Yeah.
It's
Thank
just
you
gonna
for
be a little more yeah. difficult to to mm-hmm. channel it to where it needs to go.
Yeah, so it brings in its federal funding now, so okay. we'll be going through the NEPA process.
Yeah.
And also the feds and the state are still engaged in rulemaking relative to those funds. So
are
we
they?
Don't know what the rules will be until they're made.
I thought we kind of took rules off the table.
That's where it's at. So,
so yeah. okay. isn't there still a shortfall, though? We still have a shortfall?
No. So on top of that, the COG has basically committed that they will fully fund the project, subject to us getting about 65% of the way through the design plans and coming up with a less preliminary estimate, a more exact estimate of the costs.
Great.
So we could potentially receive a full $2 million. Again, that would be filled with CMAQ funding, though.
Thank you.
That is very cool. Thank you.
He has a much better head for detail than I do, for that kind of detail. the other thing that, a couple of other things came up there. Our West Grand Enhancement Project, which was on our agenda, Mayor Ferrara was adamant, and I didn't say this, but he was adamant that Oak Park is in Grover Beach.
Well, half of it is.
So
that means we can close the roads to the road, right?
Yeah. We'll just shut off the right side.
Just as a follow-up to that, there is obviously a portion of it that is in the Rio Grande, but what we're really talking about is the fact that there are a number of both Arroyo Grande and county residents that use Oak Park as a major means of getting back and forth to 101. So
yes.
The road really is not just serving the purposes of Grover Beach, but our neighbors as well.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, I drew a little map because I have it all in my head. And I drew a little map of what was Grover and what was AG, and it's about 50-50. Well, I need to draw a better map, but that was just during the meeting. So I did make a plea for them to move as quickly as they could, and if they could bring either of those forward, either the train station or the Oak Park project, and I don't know if we could keep up if they did, but if they could bring those forward, that, you know, quite frankly, I don't know if there'll be any street left in Oak Park by 2016. I'm a little worried about that.
And
so
the downhill part.
I suggested they all take a little drive and see what they thought. So that's the end of my committee reports. So we have city council member items now. Any city council members items? We do have the revision to the short-term local street. That's not a city council item. That's number 17.
Actually, it is a city
is
council
okay.
Member item.
Oh, that's right. Council Member Nichols asked
right.
us to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Sorry, Council Member Nichols. Let's do number 17. Would you like to do that? Maybe we should have taken a break. Is it? Who's presenting this one?
So I have a staff report prepared that presents some information, but if Council Member Nichols or at Council's choice, Council Member Nichols may want to give a brief introduction or not.
No.
Okay.
I don't think an introduction is necessary. You know what we're talking about, all of you. It was brought up once before.
Okay.
Go ahead.
So in the interest of maybe focusing some attention on the details and then giving you some background information to help you make a decision, staff prepared a staff report, which you have in front of you. And I want to focus on a couple things. Attachment 1 is the council adopted list, and it's a priority list. I want to point out very clearly, it's a priority list. It's not a project list, but it basically, about a year or so ago, 2 years ago, staff looked at average annual funding available for local streets, our own funding and some other sources mixed in, and presented to you that with the amount of funding we generally expect to have for local streets annually, you could probably maintain about 13 streets very well. And so
Staff also presented to you that that one way of having decisiveness on a short-term program until another funding source becomes available would be to identify a list of priority streets, 13 priority streets, that you will focus most of your funding on, and then help staff also to choose the next project. So, for example, if I were to choose a project in fiscal year 16, I would look to this list and go down these streets in order and make sure they're all in great shape, and we'd continue to maintain these with the funds we have available. So that's the genesis and concept behind this list. But remember, council had made some promises prior to adopting the short-term street program, and the promises included completion of a section of Brighton and a section of Nice. The specifics are in the staff report. It's just a section of each, though. The council member item and council member request tonight is to really to consider adding 7th Street, and really just the section of 7th Street right adjacent to us here, between Grand Avenue and Rockaway, into the capital improvement project for next fiscal year. So it doesn't modify this list. The list is still our list of priorities. But in the capital improvement project for next year, what we would have done without this council member item would be to complete Brighton and Nice and then select streets off this priority list to fill out the project for the full budget amount. So with that being said, I'll give you a little more detail. The adopted CIP program for fiscal year 14 originally included an allocation of $400,000 for completion of what's called CIP 283. That's the local of $100,000 total, and that includes soft costs. So if this were to be added into the CIP project, Brighton, Nice, and then 7th Street together, would still leave a balance of approximately $70,000 in the project to pick up some repair items on this priority list, which would probably in that case be some localized repairs, maybe some intersection repairs on some of these major streets. So hopefully that's enough detail to help you make a decision, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Questions?
I have no questions.
I just had one kind of question following the bouncing ball of monies. So the estimate for Brighton and Nice was 230.
That's correct.
So the additional 170 from this year was going to roll over into next year anticipated, or was anticipated to be used in other projects?
No, we would roll it over and combine it with next year's funding for the same project. We have an annual funding amount for it.
Right. Okay. So, but I mean, this year we would have the 170 remaining that would roll over that we would need to find a project for.
If
we didn't decide to move forward with 7th Street.
That's correct.
Okay. Okay.
You would do Brighton and Nice, and then some other project off this list.
Okay. Gotcha. So by potentially considering this tonight, we would take the 170,000, allocate potentially 100,000 to 7th with an additional 70. Both of those might roll over because the project's some portion of it, because the 7th could start design this year with construction next year.
That's correct.
Okay. And then we would either, you would bring forth a recommendation to do a project on the major connecting streets, one of these 13, or potentially use it for some other portion of the project funding on the CDBG project or some other allocation of that if we needed additional funds on that project. Something that to be determined later, correct?
No, in particular, I mean, because it is CIP 283, the local street rehab project, we would specifically indicate additional street sections to be repaired.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. Then, so if we did decide to move forward with 7th Street, what's the proverbial next steps? Is there, obviously, CEQA design? We wouldn't need any more right away, I would assume, right? You'd come back with a project description, all that good stuff. Or if we authorize this tonight, how far do your marching orders get you?
The direction I would take tonight would be to add it into the CIP. So we would amend the CIP, which is a draft right now, And so you'd see that come forward with the budget for next fiscal year for adoption. And then we would simply begin design on the project. I mean, street projects don't have a lot of creativity, although in this case, part of the project would be to lower the crown because a lot of the problems we're seeing are related to a street that has been overlaid several times and has a fairly steep crown. But in general, we would proceed with design and then bring council a project to consider for going out to bid for construction.
And the design would start this fiscal year or next fiscal year?
I think we could begin design close to the end of this fiscal year.
Okay. Okay. Great. And then just keep my engineering hat on for just one second. I know you said there's a significant crown in the street. Is the north gutter higher than the south gutter? I mean, visually it looks that way. So it almost looks like it would almost be a sheet flow across the
You mean east and west? Not north and south.
No, seventh
street runs north and south.
Right. Yeah. Oh, you're right. I'm sorry. I am going in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
So then the east gutter would be higher than the west gutter, or is that just a visual optical
illusion? No, I think it does
part?
Appear to be slightly higher, so the street could end up being a quarter crown street, which
right.
you'd be familiar with. The crown wouldn't be directly in the middle.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Gotcha. And then I'm assuming if we did move forward with this, that the fire department, Five Cities Fire Authority, and the police department could actually start to use 7th Street again if they've avoided it for other reasons. Said tongue in cheek.
Any other questions? Okay. I would open for public comment on this one, but I'm not going to because there's no public. And so bring it back to the council.
And I'll make a motion if
okay.
you would like. I would like to go ahead with the direct staff to include South 7th Street in the fiscal year 15 local street rehab projects, CIP 283, and also encourage them that when they do start on this particular project, 283, that the first street that they start working on would be 7th.
We're going down there. Why don't you give them a decent street? So I think that's where we're headed with that. And also, though, and with the gas station, that gas station is configured so that they can take some heavy vehicles in there, and they're going out there, too. So it just gets a lot of wear and tear, and I think that's a good decision.
Madam Mayor and Council Members, just for staff's clarification, so the motion then is simply to, as provided, to direct staff to include
7th
in the CIP. Without the additional language, which when you said you were fine with that, then that was dropped. I just want to make sure we're
yes.
clear.
Yes, I'm
Thank
okay
you.
With that.
Oh, I'm glad you said that because I didn't understand that. Good. Thank you. Okay. I did have one other question that I'd forgotten to ask is, will it be will we do the intersection at Rockaway and 7th as well, or will it just be up to Rockaway?
I think that depends on the condition of the street.
Okay.
I mean,
if
we're right there and it also has either a problem with the crown or the condition of the street is in such disrepair that it would make sense, then certainly we could go through through Rockaway with the repair.
Okay. Thank you. Is this a roll call here? Can't remember.
It's a voice vote.
A voice vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
It's unanimous and good. Glad to hear that. So are there any other council member items? I'm going to hold mine till next time.
I just had a council communication.
Okay.
Just a quick update. I had the opportunity to go to the mayor's meeting as our mayor was actually out of town up in at the League of California Cities conferences, and it was up in Atascadero at their new city hall, which was very nicely reconfigured. And anybody's available to take a tour of it, just give them a little bit of notice. But the thing I wanted to mention was that Tom Bordenaro, the assessor, was the speaker. And he confirmed what our city manager mentioned this evening in our fiscal year 15 forecast, is that property taxes and so forth are going up on the order of about 3% countywide. He did say, actually, that one of the reasons it's only 3% is the fact that the
and see if I can get this correct without mixing up my language, is the property values are currently below, a significant number of property values are below what would be their Prop 13 elements of discussion, so in which case the increase would be 2%. But because of that, property taxes for some people are going up larger than the 2% because it's a kind of a makeup year. But overall, it's the overall increase still is 3%. If we were all at Prop 13 valuations, we probably would see about a 5% increase.
Wow.
So bad news for individual homeowners that your property taxes can go up more than 2%, but overall, it's they're going in a positive direction.
That's great. And I guess I will piggyback on that. Next month, it will be in Grover Beach. So on May 2nd, we'll be in Grover Beach. And I immediately after it, we will also be doing our second annual Five Cities Tourism Summit. We did one last year, and it was helpful. It built some relationships, and I think we'll see it. We've had a lot of enthusiasm to do the same again this year, so we'll be doing that with the Five Cities Tourism providers to find ways that we can work together to bring more people, make them stay longer, and have them spend more money, and do it cost-effectively by working together. So those are the objectives. And any other council member communications?
Yes, one more item. I don't know. I think this is appropriate. Stop me if I'm wrong. The Five City Men's Club is having their annual comedy night, and they do have tables, VIP tables for eight for $400. And I was talking to one of the members of the Five Cities Men's Club, and they have done quite a bit for the city. Mm-hmm. And he thought it would really be appropriate and be nice if city itself, such as council members, attended that comedy night and bought a table. So I thought I would bring that up and ask if any of you are interested. A table of eight, $400. So I guess we can discuss this later. It's not on the agenda.
What's the date?
But, yeah, I want you to know that it is on May the 10th, and it is from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. The showtime, it says, is at 7 p.m. I believe this was in one of our Friday night letters, was it not?
It was somewhere.
Somewhere.
I think it was, and I think it came out in the chamber communication, too.
I remember seeing it.
Okay, well, it did come out, but I will talk to you individually later. I would like to see if we can't put together a table, which the men's club.
Got it. All right. So that's tomorrow night at 6. The other that I just wanted to real briefly tell you is that I'll be attending the California Association of Local Economic Developers tomorrow. We're a member of the CalEd organization and their annual economic development conference, Taking Care of Business, is being held in Sacramento over Tuesday and Wednesday. So I'll be out of town both of those days and traveling back on Thursday.
I would like to ask a question in reference to tomorrow night's meeting. Number one, my wife was contacted. She's now a volunteer. Asked if she would go out Saturday morning and deliver leaflets talking or announcing this meeting tomorrow night. And both of us volunteered to do that. And I was quite surprised. I took that little business park and tried to distribute leaflets announcing that meeting. And out of the and it was six or seven of the business people that I contacted all had already received a leaflet, were fully aware of it, and fully intended to be there.
Good.
Somebody else through the Chamber of Commerce, and I believe Duke Sterling, had done quite a bit of work on it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there are going to be a lot of people there. I personally am going to go, and I would encourage the other council members to go. Mm-hmm. If anybody else is going, this does not create a problem, I hope.
If council members go as observers, then certainly not. But it is a city-sponsored function, so if a quorum of you is there and engages, for lack of a better word, we may have a problem.
I do plan on attending, but not engaging.
Right, me too.
Yeah, and it's too late to post engaged. It as a special meeting. Yeah.
I'll attend it. I'm not engaged.
I won't attend.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure that we all knew about it, that we're those that can attend. I think it would be great. There's an awful lot of interest in it.
I know.
We need to hear from the people. So we're moving, if there are no more council member communications or comments, we're moving to city attorney comments. And if you don't have any, then would you announce the...
Certainly. I do not have any, and it is the intent of the city council to meet in closed session on two items, one being labor negotiations for all represented and unrepresented group, the second one being potential litigation, one case.
Thank you. It is 9:49. We are recessed to closed session. We'll be back.